We are running seriously out of time. We were supposed to have started at 9, and surely there were some delays in terms of transport from other members, others getting still getting lost by the venue. We hope that our next meetings are going to be located in suitable Mr. Committee Secretary. We've said that we don't like these venues that are hidden away from the mainstream of the public. So I think let's put it now clearly that next meeting is not going to be held in this committee room. Having said that, we would like to have a round of introduction of people who are here from various stakeholders, and from there we will then head over to the department under the leadership of the Director General to take us through in terms of the business of the day, which is the annual report. Let me explain to members first that the original plan was that we were going to receive the strat plan from the department today. And through the interactions between my office and the office of the DG, we came to realization of the fact that we will be short-circuiting the process. We need to allow the planning process to unfold until around February next year, so that we then get the strat plan, which would also be costed, so that when we deliberate over that strat plan, then we're also informed in terms of the funding of the programs that shall have been decided upon. And we're looking also, secondly, at more long-term strat plan, which would cover the period of 5 years, which would be the term of this parliament. So we would be then apologizing for that change in the program, and but fortunately the department was ready to present its annual report. I understand that a number of members did not receive the thick document called annual report 2008-2009. It's a pity the secretary has just walked out. Because that is not the only report that the members did not receive. According to the ATC, the department has also tabled state-owned enterprises reports, annual reports, that are reporting to the department, your geoscience, your MinTech, and so forth. But none of us have got copies of such reports. This makes it difficult, Mr. Committee Secretary. Members did not receive the annual report as it was tabled sometime in at the end of September. Members also did not receive the annual reports of the state-owned enterprises that are reporting to the department. And those, according to the ATC, have been tabled. And I think we need to correct this anomaly. It's going to make it extremely difficult for members to engage meaningfully on this annual report, because the department surely is going to give us the slides and the highlights with the hope that members have gone through the thick document, which was not circulated. And we're saying this, that before the next meeting next week, this must be done. All these reports that are tabled must be circulated to members, so that members can then look at them. So with that, colleagues, let's do the introduction. That was, by the way, to clarify basically what is going to be the business of the day today. My name is Fred Gona, for those members members of the public that have joined us. I'm the portfolio committee chairperson, dealing with matters pertaining to mineral resources. Of course, my origin is the African National Congress. Next to me is
Rajoya Ramesh, secretary to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Nomvula Frida Matibela, member of this committee.
Eric Lucas, member of the committee.
Hendrik Schmidt, member of the committee.
Philip Dexter, member of this committee.
Sbusiso Somimi, National Union of Mine Workers.
Tommy de Villiers, Cecil.
Jabu Mapalala, Chamber of Mine.
You better get next.
Jack Ferris, ANC Caucus.
Sili Makilo, ANC Recession.
Hilda Barron, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Andrew McLaughlin, 7-8 Monitoring.
Tandaga Zung, Corporate Services from the Department.
That's Sandra Gimana, CFO, Department of Mineral Resources.
Johnson Zimande, Department of Mineral Resources.
Thabo Gazi, Chief Inspector of Mines.
Jacinto Rocha, Deputy Director General, Mineral Resources.
Sandile Nkuna, Director General, Department of Mineral Resources.
Vuselelo Makakula, member of this committee.
I'm Faith Bikani, also a member of the committee.
Sibongiseni Ngcobo, committee researcher.
F.T. Mahuma, headman, Royal Bafokeng Nation.
Vincent Patrick David Patella, headman, Royal Bafokeng Nation.
A.K. Mute, Royal Bafokeng headman.
Mansu, headman, Bafokeng.
My name is Geoffrey Tiswe from Royal Bafokeng Headman. Second.
Kiorape Dituma Hole, Royal Bafokeng Khosi Executive.
I'm Monica Zabo, Acting Chief of Staff in the Ministry.
Joseph Kataka, DMR Chief Director of Strategy, Risk and Monitoring.
People remaining.
Jeremy Michael, Head of Communications and International Relations for the Department.
And you, young lady?
Beauty Sana, Committee Assistant.
Thank you very much. Let me once more welcome you, all of you present here, and a special welcome to the Royal Bafokeng delegation. We are honored as this committee to have you in our presence, and we hope that you would observe our deliberations, and when the time allows, we can have a brief interaction with yourselves on matters that are closer to you in terms of your interest as a Royal Bafokeng nation. Honorable members, I would now allow the DG to take us through the presentation of the report. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members, thank you for giving us the opportunity to present to you the department's annual report for 2008-2009. This annual report affords us the opportunity to account on the performance of the department pertaining to its mandate and its contribution towards a better life in relation to government's overarching programs. Moreover, the annual report gives effect to the imperatives of accountability and transparency, values that are enshrined in our constitution, the supreme law, and the repository of the norms of the nation. The global financial crisis dating to 2008 radically slowed down economies in many cases caused recession. Mining companies are experiencing varying levels of difficulty, with some retrenching employees, while others have either closed down or been put under administration. The Mining Industry Growth, Development and Employment Task Team, which comprises the mining industry as well as the labor and the Department of Minerals and Energy of Mineral Resources, was set up to mitigate the severity of the crisis in the mining industry and continues with interventions that can be applied over the medium to long term. This has already yielded some positive results, including containing the levels of cumulative retrenchment to about 35,000, contrary to early forecasts of more than 100,000 during the early part of the crisis. MIGDET was also able to influence deferment of the royalty bill, was also able to obtain stakeholder support for the beneficiation strategy, and is currently initiating the development of a mining development agency, and it sought a commitment from companies to the mining regulatory compliance in its entirety. This intervention has also strengthened relationships among all stakeholders in working together to address the challenges of the collective. The department is continuing with the assessment of the mining charter that began in the last financial year. Significant progress has been made towards quantifying the charter's impact. The charter gives effect to transformation objectives in the mining industry as a result of the proclamation of the MPRDA. The provisions to review the charter are based on an agreement reached among all stakeholders at the time of the signing of the charter. The beneficiation strategy was launched on the 31st of March 2009 after approval was granted by Cabinet for the strategy to be circulated for broader consultation. The launch was used to inform stakeholders about the strategy and seek their inputs. Once all comments are received, they will be incorporated into a strategy. The beneficiation strategy task team will reconvene to prepare for a Cabinet memo seeking final Cabinet approval for the strategy to be adopted as a policy position for the country. The role of small-scale mining in the community is critical, as it entails community upliftment, job creation, and poverty alleviation. Albeit varying levels of success have been attained to date by the department, we are therefore currently developing a new approach to maximize the impact of small-scale mining, with particular focus on community development. The past year has marked a shift in how health and safety is dealt with at mines. The public and workers have focused the attention of all involved with mining on health and safety issues. The industry has recorded a welcome 28% improvement in fatality levels and reduction in injuries at work. The presidential audit into health and safety at mines has highlighted, however, the need for mine operators to improve compliance with legal requirements, the need to develop enabling frameworks for prosecution of negligent operators, and the building of enforcement capacity. The Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate completed the presidential audit during the year under review and will work hard to realize the implementation of the outcomes of the Tripartite Leadership Summit on Health and Safety at Mines and the recommendations from the presidential audit report. All stakeholders in the sector will be encouraged to continue to work together to improve health and safety performance of mines. All the state-owned entities reporting to the Minister of Mineral Resources managed to obtain clean audit reports for the year under review. While the achievements are commendable, there were some instances of non-compliance noted by the Auditor General, and the compliance function of the department is and will be making quarterly follow-ups to ensure that action plans are put in place to ensure that these instances are addressed and do not recur in future. In 2007-2008, the PPC that the department presents its annual, the PPC instructed that the department should present its annual report performance report using the balanced scorecard approach. As the department, we experience a great challenge in presenting outcome-based results from output-based plans, because our plans were based on an output-based approach, and the portfolio committee wanted us to report on an outcome-based approach. We therefore decided that this year, 2008-2009, we will take the initiative and adopt the balanced scorecard approach at the strategic planning stage. Based on this approach, the department strategy mapping highlights an integrated planning process that starts from our strategy, what we want our department to be, what our customers, both external and internal, expect from us, what internal processes are required to support our objectives, and how to make the department an employer of choice, and how best we can achieve on our plans within our limited financial resources. As this was our first year of the implementation of the balanced scorecard, our overall plan did not highlight the long-term desired outcome, as these will only become apparent in the years to come. During the year under review, we started a process of reviewing the structural relationship between line function and the support services. This process looked at the alignment of support services to line function strategies and the support services' capacity to deliver and respond to the growth experienced within the line function. The process further looked at the positioning of one of the critical elements of the support function, the human resource function. One of the challenges highlighted by this exercise was capacity. To implement the recommendations of the review, we started a process of reviewing support structures. This process has to date been linked to the split that is currently taking place within the DME, which would then culminate in the separation of DMR from DME. Honorable members, at this stage, I would like to briefly take you through the progress on the split of the Department of Minerals and Energy. With the President's announcement of the restructuring of the government in May 2009, an interdepartmental task team led by the DPSA, President and National Treasurer was formed. This team, known as NMOS, the National Macro Organization of State Project, is further represented by six affected departments, including ours. Interdepartmental meetings have been held since end of July, where government-wide plans and time frames are set. DME is one of the departments. Although the split of the Department of Minerals and Energy can be considered as less complicated and probably quicker to implement, the process cannot be done outside the overall NMOS processes and the time frames. Our progress towards the finalization of the split is highly dependent on the overall progress on government time frames. The DDG, responsible for corporate services,
will, when she's presenting her program, elaborate on this. And Chairperson, I would also like to indicate to the honourable members that this report, this annual report, is based on the work of the DME, not on the work of the DMR. But what we will do in our presentation will only deal with those programs that are germane to the Department of Mineral Resources, and we'll leave all those that relate to energy. But it will be difficult, though, to deal with Program 1, because Program 1 deals with both departments, both energy and mineral resources. So when we present, therefore, Program 1, we'll be presenting Program 1 in respect of both minerals and energy, because it's difficult to split it. And coming now, Honorable Chairperson, to the financial performance of the department, the figures that we have are inclusive of programs that belong to the Department of Energy, as I've already stated. I'm pleased to say, Honorable Chairperson, that the budget performance remained within target. The department has maintained an underspending level below 4% in the past 4 years. Underspending is mainly attributable to the following factors. Number one, delays in finalizing projects at year end, leading to rollover of budget. Number two, vacancies within certain branches of the department. And lastly, delays in transfers due to contractual issues. These particularly are in the INEP and EDSM programs, which are energy-related programs. The department chairperson once again received another unqualified report for the fourth year in a row now. And thank you very much, Chairperson. And what I'll do now, I would, with your permission, ask the program managers to elaborate the overarching input that I've just given and make inputs that are specific to their individual programs.
Thank you, TG.
Thank you, TG. Thank you, Chairperson and the honorable members. The health and safety program, as we well know, just the purpose, reflecting on the purpose of the branch, is to execute the department's mandate to safeguard the health and safety of mine employees and people affected by mining activities.
Sorry, Mr. Gassi. Were you not going to build this up on the... Or is that we don't have machinery to do so?
It looks like there's no machine to project. Check.
Is it workable?
Okay, can I proceed? Okay. Thank you. Just on page one, highlighting the measurable objectives of the branch, reducing mine-related deaths, injuries, ill health through the formulation of national policy and legislation, the provision of advice, and the application of systems that monitor, audit, and enforce compliance to the mining sector. Now, when you look at the overall presentation, it captures all the activities accounted for in the annual report. On a number of occasions, we've had an opportunity to present to the committee. So I'm going to focus on the key areas that were highlighted in the introductory remarks of the Director General, the inspections, audits, investigations, also touching on capacity development and also occupational health and safety performance and the presidential audit. When we look at the inspections, on slide number 9 and 10, we can see in overall that the targets were set, and in terms of inspections, we managed to achieve 62%, 84% on the investigations, and on in loco and inquiry investigations, 45%. On audits, 146%. And audits overlapped with the presidential audit, and that's why we can see there was a higher achievement in that particular area. And I'd like to highlight also on slide 11 and 12, slide 9 and 10. The presentation hasn't got page numbers, but each slide, just at the bottom right, there are numbers, number 9 and 10.
What document is
okay. Thank you, Chair. So on page 12, just looking at the administrative work related to the health and safety component, we can see that there was a good achievement on page 12, talking to number of process mining applications, 99% compared to the 95% that was targeted. And on the EMPs and land use applications, 80% achieved, 100% on EMPs. And I'm drawing the members' attention to the particular slide, because one can clearly, when we talk about capacity, we can see that there is that focus on administrative work, maybe on inspections, things a bit on the low side. So looking at page 13, the occupational health statistics, that's an overall slide of diseases as reported in the annual medical report that mine submits to the department. And we can see there that pulmonary TB continues to be the biggest problem in the sector, TB coupled also with silicosis and with a mix of HIV and AIDS in the sector, that combination becoming a big problem. However, the minister has highlighted that we'll be focusing more on health problems
and are addressing the challenges related to TB, noise-induced hearing loss. As we can clearly see, those are the biggest problems in the sector. The next slide on page 14 focuses on the gold because it's the main contributor of occupational diseases in the sector. And then the next slide looks at platinum. The shift in platinum shifting to noise-induced hearing loss, pulmonary TB being on the low side. However, noise-induced hearing loss being the biggest problem. And then we shared this slide in our last presentation to the committee, which helps us to focus our attention on health-related problems. Because often we talk about fatalities, but that slide is taken from the National Institute of Occupational Health, indicating that levels of death relating to occupational diseases, in particular here respiratory illnesses, is almost three or four times the fatalities related to safety, hence indicating the importance of focusing on health and dealing with the challenges in that area. The following slide captures the improvements that were achieved in the last year. Fatality rate decreased by 28% to 0.21%. The overall performance of the sector, 28%, and then fatality rate was recorded at 0.15. That's a comparative figure, the lowest figure we've recorded in our history of mining. Injury rates dropped by 11%, and reportable injury rates in 2008 by 3.2%. And the figures are indicated in the following table for ease of reference per province. And we can see on the extreme right that at the top, the overall improvement was 28%. And I just wanted to point to Mpumalanga, where in many regions we've recorded double-digit improvement. However, in Mpumalanga, where predominant is coal mining, we can see there that there was a bit of regression of 6%. But in overall, all regions recorded good improvement in terms of safety. And the graphs in page 19 just capture the historical performance of the sector in improving health and safety, looking at main commodities. And then page 20 looks at injuries. Injuries in overall at the top right, 11.6%, which was the improvement in 2008. And we also look at different regions. And the two regions that really drive this improvement is Gauteng and Northwest, because we know that's where most of fatalities and injuries occur in the sector. And then page 21, looking at injuries similar as the previous graph, showing a historical performance and a downward trending of injuries in the sector. However, the green one indicating that general accidents, which cannot be classified as fall of ground machinery, are very high, and that reflects on how the investigations are conducted, classification of accidents, and I'll reflect on what we're doing to improve the situation there. Page 22 looks at the agencies, the causes of accidents in the mining sector, and the improvements on the extreme right that were recorded, both for fatalities and injuries. Oh, the slide is on the gray in the middle looks at improvement in fatalities, and we can see at the top falls of ground, which account for over 50% of deaths in the mining sector. We recorded an improvement of 32%, and one can go down the list, but particularly falls of ground and machinery are the main contributors of fatalities and injuries in the sector, and we can see the major improvement recorded in the previous year. And we'll continue to build on this improvement by implementing the Presidential Audit Report I didn't capture that slide, but just to talk briefly about what we're doing in implementing the presidential audit report, just to continue to build on those improvements. MQA has looked at the recommendation in the presidential audit report, and on the basis of the recommendation, they are currently reviewing all the unit standards to incorporate health and safety competency for all job specified for mining operations. And in the next 5 years, MQA will be going on a drive to train 40,000 health and safety representatives. And we think it's very important because health and safety representatives are at workplaces 24/7. And it helps in terms of coverage, reporting of incidents, and improving the situation further. And also we're busy amending the regulations because of the recommendations of the presidential audit to look at the competencies, the operational risk management competency of people who are accountable or who are managing operations at mine. And the Mine Health and Safety Council also has reviewed its research model to make sure that the research is much more focused, really looking at the Pareto principle, focusing our energies and resources on the top 20 problems that will give us the 80% results that we need. Now, reflecting on the law numbers in terms of achievement, there are a number of things that we are doing internally in the department. The department has got a service level agreement with West University to develop a training curriculum for inspectors, and it's well underway. Training programs are running to develop the inspectors. MQA is also running a skilling program this year and right through into June next year, where we look at inspections, auditing, and running skills, specific skills programs to capacitate inspectors. And that is necessary because we had a high turnover recently, so newer inspectors who are coming in need that particular training to keep them focused and drive the improvement that we've recorded. And in the last 2 years, we had students at Goldfield, 23 learnerships. They've just completed 74% achievement, 74% of them achieved, and we have recruited them into the structures. And lastly, there on capacity development, we're also running a program where we have a bursary scheme. We have 16 students at different universities studying to build capacity on a continual basis for the inspectors. So in overall, Chairperson, that covers the presentation. The last slide, just focusing on the key areas that are of problem, platinum and gold sector, and rock-related fatalities. We recorded 47% improvement in the platinum sector, and in the gold sector, 22% improvement. And on transport, 25%, and gold sector, 42%. And I specifically chose those because they are the main drivers. Over 60% of fatalities and injuries are due to falls of ground and transport in our underground mines. And then in the last year, we had the South Deep incident, 9 people killed. I'm just reflecting on the disaster type of accident, seismic event that killed 4 employees. And we also involved with illegal mining that is posing a major challenge to health and safety. But all enforcement institutions and organizations are involved in dealing with the problem. That concludes the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now move to mineral regulation. Okay, now we'll start with policy, Chairperson. So, please,
thank you, Chairperson, DG, members. The first slide there, I'm going to talk to is basically on beneficiation, the commitment.
We've got mind health and safety, we've got I think corporate services. Are they somewhere?
I'm sure there was a problem in terms of duplicating the copies in the chapter. Zakel, I think, is still working on them.
All right, let's go on so long. That means you'll have to take us through a bit steady so that we can then follow your presentation. In the interest of time, honourable members, let's allow her to continue. But then, please slow down your speed so that you can then take us along whilst we don't have copies.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. One of the commitments for the financial year that the branch had was to give more attention to the issue of beneficiation, where we had committed that we would develop a beneficiation implementation plan. We can confirm that the strategy, the beneficiation strategy, has been developed, and the plan is dependent on the strategy being approved, and we're still waiting for the approval of the beneficiation strategy. But however, the strategy was launched in March 2009, and more consultation was done, at the approval of cabinet was done on with the broader stakeholders on the strategy itself, and the plan would therefore follow the strategy after its approval. Regarding the contribution of the branch on security of energy supply, the branch had to identify which minerals are strategic for the country with regards to energy generation, and coal and uranium were identified, and the two strategies, a strategy on coal and a strategy on uranium, have been developed, and they are currently being circulated for consultation internally in the department. And in the main, the reason for that is just to manage just to design a way of managing the exploitation of the two minerals which have been identified as strategic for the country, with a specific reference to securing the energy of the energy supply. The next slide talks to the mine closure strategy. I'm sure honourable members do know that a lot of areas, in fact, almost all the provinces, different provinces in the country, do have abandoned mines. There are a whole lot of issues relating to that. And the department had a plan, had a commitment to develop a mine closure strategy, which a strategy was developed. It has been developed particularly for the Vets Basin and Port Elizabeth, Orkney, Northwest areas. Strategy has been developed for mine closure, and the current status of the strategy is that it has been sent out for comments, and at this point in time the comments are being consolidated between the department and Council for Geoscience for presentation to the minister later this year. Moving on to the mining charter, which was one of the commitments for the branch, that we would review the mining charter so as to assess our progress in terms of the transformation as it is espoused in the MPRDA. The mining charter had a clause in it which said that we will review it after 5 years. So the review process started, it's still underway, and the time frame that we did set for the consultant to present the report was end of October, wherein that report then would be looked at by the department and presented to the minister. Then the report would then give us an indication as to where we are. In fact, it would give us an indication of where we are with the time frames that we had set, because we had time frames and certain targets for certain things to happen by 2009 and so forth and so forth, and there were targets also for 2014 regarding ownership issues. So basically, and as well as skills development, all the elements of the charter, skills development, employment equity, management issues, there were targets that were set. So the review is actually looking at all those targets. Are we meeting those targets, or have we met those targets? If we haven't met the targets, what has been the shortcomings and what it is that we need to do to correct? But the study, the outcome of the study will then give us pointers and indications as to what it is that needs to be done going forward. Moving on to small-scale mining. The branch had a commitment that we would create jobs on small-scale mining, and at this point there have been 15 new small-scale mining projects that were established in different communities. And Chairperson, lastly on MIGDET, which the DG in his opening speech referred to, this is a task team that was set up in collaboration with business and labor with the intention to mitigate job losses in the mining industry. And the task team, the establishment of MIGDET, actually ensured that all options were explored before resorting to retrenchments during the economic meltdown. And we've seen some successes from the creation of MIGDET, where there was this figure of plus minus 100,000 that the job losses would be sitting somewhere there. But due to these interventions and the establishment of MIGDET, the figure is sitting at plus minus 37,000, including workers who opted for the rescue plan on training. And the task team is also mandated to prepare for maximum benefit for the country during the upswing. So it's not that MIGDET will die off when things start improving. There are strategies being implemented to ensure that there are interventions on an ongoing basis. And that, Chairperson, brings me to the end of the presentation.
That's corporate services.
Okay.
Okay, let's go.
Chairperson, honorable members. Thank you. The DG has already made an indication, a brief overview of what corporate services are focusing on last year. But what I'd just like to take you through, while just trying to put it up on the machine, is our planning session. The first slide talks about the purpose of the corporate services, which is to enable the department to deliver on its mandate by providing strategic management and administrative support to the ministry and the department. Corporate services as a branch provide the following services to the department. It's responsible for strategy planning, risk management, and monitoring. It's responsible for management services, which should include your HR function, your legal services, security risk management. Also includes communication and international coordination. Also addresses the aspects of special projects and special programs, which deals with basically our vulnerable groups, that is the women, the youth, the children, and the disabled. And it also provides administrative function to the ministry. When the DG spoke, he mentioned the approach that we adopted last year in terms of the balance scorecard. So when we looked at what is expected or what corporate services is supposed to be presenting or providing to our customers, which is internal and external customers, this is what we've identified. And then on the next slide, I'll be addressing to the honorable members what action has been taken or the report back on the performance against those. On the current slide, we're talking about our external customers. What are their expectations from us? With regard to communication, they're expecting us to communicate the department's message, profile the department, and provide information on opportunities, skills development, and any training opportunities that are available in the mining sector in this particular case. I won't talk about energy. Also need to provide oversight on the activities of the state-owned entities as these report directly to the Minister of Minerals and Energy. Internally, it is expected of us as corporate services to provide or create an enabling environment for the effective and efficient service delivery. So looking at the next slide, talk about what our customers have received or what has been done during the course of the 2008-09 financial year. Firstly, to the provision of the ministerial spokesperson service. We did have some of the members who might have been part of this team last year. We did have an instance where we had where we did not have someone to head our corporate service, I mean our communication. But as that middle of next year, we did manage to employ the services of a chief director, and therefore the ministerial spokesperson services has been rendered. The implementation of the communication strategy. We developed a comprehensive communication strategy which addresses the issues of media liaison, addresses the issues of stakeholder relations, events management, media campaigns, information dissemination. And within that plan, it is laid out in the document itself, the annual report. It gives the incidents or the activities that were done in all those areas that are listed here. On the area of the oversight on the activity of the SOEs, we have a chief directorate called the Strategy Risk and Monitoring Chief Directorate. The responsibility of that unit is to firstly to make sure that the department complies to all the legal, the financial, and the administrative requirements together with the SOEs. So on the line of the SOEs, we have a requirement, or the minister as the shareholder has a requirement to make sure that they submit firstly the strategy plan, the budget proposals, the quarterly reporting, and the annual reporting of all the state-owned entities. And that facility is provided for by this particular chief directorate. And the activities there, we did table on time, although I've been disappointed to learn that those things have not, the members have not received them. But in terms of that compliance, we have tables on time. We have provided the quarterly reports to the minister, which are made from this particular unit to the minister in terms of monitoring of the performance of the SOEs against their strategic plan or work plans which they had submitted earlier in the year. On the area of our internal customers, they expect us to provide a safe and a secure environment of all the DME officials. That is the provision of safe working conditions, security services of all DME buildings, security of the individual, security of information. That function is performed on a daily basis. The monitoring of strategic planning, risk management, and performance reporting by the department that I've already mentioned, that we do on a quarterly basis, and of course it culminates into the annual report, which is the annual performance report of the department. Capacitating the department for service delivery, this is one of the main functions that we as the corporate services are going to provide to internally. One of the things that DG mentioned on the challenges that we were focusing on last year was the issue of looking at how does corporate services respond to the growing number or the growth in the size of the line function within the Department of Minerals and Energy. So that process was supposed to address, to say to us, over the past 4 to 5 years, we've had minimal growth within support services as compared to the growth within the mining branches and the energy branches to a lesser extent. So what we did early last year, we produced a what we call an integrated HR plan. That plan addresses the requirements, the capacity requirements of the department, starting from the need analysis right up to the separation. In other words, we're taking care of what the department needs, the type of individuals that they need, where do we get them, and once we've got them, what do we do with them internally? How do we train them? How do we monitor them? How do we retain them? This is all talent management issues right up to the stage where each individual leaves the department. That integrated HR plan, honorable members, was approved by the then Minister of Minerals and Energy together with the DG in terms of implementation. That's where we are. We have implemented some of the aspects of that plan during the course of the year, although, of course, we did have some funding challenges. But that plan now, going forward, if you can indulge me, going forward now, we need to take that plan because it's addressing the requirements of the Department of Minerals and Energy, not the split department. So we are going to take that exact plan and relook at it and review it now and start focusing specifically on the individual departments. One of the functions that we provided during the year is ensuring the streamlining of gender and youth in the departments. Within the department itself. One of the processes that we engage in that is that each time that we go through a vacancy, when we do the advertising and the interviews and the appointments, during the appointment process or the interviewing process, we focus on the statistics. In other words, management is advised on what are we looking at in terms of the gender or the gender and youth and then the youth streamlining within the particular unit. So that process gives us an opportunity of saying that how do we address the issue of gender equality within the department. The performance that we've had to date on the issue of gender performance in the department for the year 2008-09, out of a total staff complement of about 1,194, we have 574 males and 620 females. On the level of SMS, which is senior management, we have 64 males and 34 females. One of the issues that you've also been dealing with within the issue of addressing the statistics of gender was addressing the issue of the turnover rate in the department. That also impacts a lot on how many females leave the department as against how many females have joined the department. The whole spread of the details of each of the categories is unfortunately at the back of the annual report. But just briefly, I can summarize that for the honorable members, is that if you look at the turnover rate for 2008-09, it was sitting at 17.5% for the department. Within that 17.5%, 2.1% belongs to the FMS group, and then the junior staff level, it was at 15.4%. So it was a very high level of turnover that was experienced by the department during the course of 2008-2009. But within that context, we have been able to implement promotions within the department, in other words, using our own rather than going outside to look for other people. And in that process, we're able to implement 666 promotions within the department, 337 of whom were male, and 325 were female. Addressing the issue of vulnerable groups outside the department is involved in a number of initiatives with women in the mining and energy sector, also in the area of youth. We are involved in the sense that when these formations come to the department, either through the DG's office or the minister or the individuals, they come to us as a department presenting an initiative that they have started, saying we've come together either as women and we are interested in mining. So what the department's approach is in this area is to say, is to talk to them in terms of advising them on the law that is applicable to their interests, advising them on other aspects of what the department can provide for them, organizing some information sessions, which they in turn will be able to ask questions and understand where they come from. So the department's involvement here is information sharing. So those are the areas that we've been involved in. For instance, we've got formation that addresses the youth in the mining and energy. We've got a women formation, which is, I think, most of us around the table know, some women. Then we've got the WUSA, which is a women in oil and gas. We've got WINSA. We've got women in nuclear. We've also got a formation where we deal with the junior, I used to call them the junior youth, that is the children who are at school. Because our focus is that this is not just to give people the opportunities for work, it's also to skills development and also to encourage the involvement of the youth in the industry. We have, for instance, what we call a learners focus week, where we go around the country addressing youth in grades 9 and 10, that's standard 9 and, I mean, in grades 11 and 12, that's standard 9 and 10. Because the message there for this information session, what you are saying to them, there is more to science and math. In other words, we address them in opportunities and what you can do with your mathematics, what you can do with your science subjects, as a researcher, as a geologist, as whatever. So we go through that whole process with the youth, both in grade 11 and 12, and that's a program that has been running for quite a while in the department. In addressing the internal processes, what internal procedures and processes we need to implement as a department, we looked at how we can improve our planning processes. As the DG has indicated, we've introduced a balance scorecard. We also look at how we can implement best practice management strategies. We look at implementing policies to protect the vulnerable groups, both internally and externally, and also look at the issue of the monitoring and evaluation of the department's performance. In that area, like I've already indicated, we've introduced the balance scorecard in our planning process, and also we've made emphasis on the alignment of the department's strategic forecast to those of the SOEs. The ministers have had various meetings with the different boards to address what they are doing in terms of saying that in terms of the plans you have for the year, are you addressing what the department is looking at, which in turn will be addressing what government as a general is looking at. So in that area, the TAO has been functioning. In the area of best practice for management strategies, we have introduced a number of developmental programs for our managers. One of them, is which we started last year, was the VET program, where we sent all the managers within DME for the training program. We started at the level of director, but all directors attended last year. We had a very good turnout and a very good pass rate in terms of that. We are hoping that this year we'll be able to continue with the chief directors, but because of funding constraints, we haven't been able to implement that. Probably going to be doing it next year. But the longer term of it that we also are looking at, that each manager needs to go through that training program, which of course is funded by the department itself. We have a number of bursaries within the department and scholarships, both internal and external. In terms of our training budget for the year under review, the department had allocated 3.5 million for training and development. This is now for internal employees. And out of that, we spent 2.5 million. The total number of people who took advantage of those training programs, we had 289 females and 324 males in total. In terms of bursaries that have been offered by the department, we had set aside a budget of 1.2 million, of which 1.050 was spent internally. So that addresses the issue of how we are addressing the the training and development within the department. I've already indicated to you the gender statistics for the department. And the last bullet point on that slide is talking about the VGs, that is the Vulnerable Group Skills Development Initiatives that we have. I've already indicated on what we do to the learners at the learners level. We do have a number of bursaries and scholarships that we have in partnership with other governments or with other entities within the country. For instance, we do have a SASOL sponsorship program, which we take about 10 beneficiaries on an annual basis, focusing on the mine health and safety area. We do have the international sponsorship from the Malaysian government. That is a sponsorship that just started in 1999. It was actually started by the DG himself, together with his counterpart in Malaysia. That project has grown. Since 1999, we've been taking 10 students every year to Malaysia to go for a four-year degree, fully paid scholarship in degrees in IT and engineering. It's been one of the most successful projects that we have in the department. We do have another scholarship where we take off two people to France on an annual basis. And then of course the internship program within the department. To date, for the 2008-09 financial year, total number of current interns that you've had is 188, which is 19% of the DME's establishment. So which is fortunately 14% more than the quota of that has been decided by cabinet of 5%. Most of these interns have been fortunate enough to get permanent employment within the department. Some of them have joined our sister department, some of them have actually joined our SOEs. So we do make an effort of making sure that those individuals, once they are finished within the internship program, which is only a year's program, we try and find permanent employment for them. On the perspective of learning and growth, in other words, capacity needed by the department employee to deliver, I've already indicated a lot of initiatives that we've done within the department just to promote our own employees, making DME an employer of choice. Provision of the training and development initiatives, I've already taken the members through some of the initiatives that we have. I've already spoken about the integrated human resource plan, which addresses the need analysis for the organization right up to the separation when the individual leaves the department. I've already spoken about the promotions that you've already had during the 2008-09, the average is 55%. I've spoken about internal training initiatives that are undertaken to promote our own employees, encouraging them to stay in the department for as long as they can. And lastly, ladies and gentlemen, on the financial perspective,
of ensuring appropriate budget and provision of adequate resources for priorities identified. We do encourage the compliance with related legislation, especially in the areas of PFMA, as well as whatever projects we undertake as corporate services, there is value for money. With your permission, Chairperson and honourable members, I'd just like to quickly give you a very high-level summary of the progress on the split of the department. The last time we presented, we promised that we're gonna invite the department as soon as the structure has been approved by the minister. So let me just quickly take you through that before. What has been done to date is that we have presented to the two department ministers, Minister of Energy and Minister, the Minister of Mineral Resources, two options in terms of the way forward. That was done sometime in July. What we presented to them was that is an interim phase, which is what happens between now and the end of the financial year, and then the end state, which starts from the 1st of April next year. The reason we are doing that, ladies and gentlemen, is because we are not in a position to say, as of now, we can split the two departments. Line function effectively can split any time because the different functions are very specific. There is no overlapping there. The only challenge that you had is when you come to support services, because that's when you start talking about the sharing of resources, which unfortunately we don't have at the moment. I've already indicated to the members the issue of the. I'm sorry, I don't have a slide on this one. I'm going to try and speak a bit slowly because I'm a very fast speaker, unfortunately. What we've done is that within corporate of support services, that is now corporate services and the CFO's office and internal audit, we've got one pool which needs to be shared by both departments. So that is why it's almost impossible for us to split as early as that, because once we split, sometimes you have to provide a 50% split. In other words, 50% goes to the side, 50% goes to the side, and that is not enough. So what we have done, we presented to the ministers and the DG a proposal of what we can do between now and the end of the financial year. That proposal is addressing the issue of saying that the DG of Minerals and Energy is going to be the hosting DG who will host functions for the Department of Energy in terms of the support service function, in terms of the budget itself, because he is currently the authorized accounting officer. So the DG sitting under the Department of Mineral Resources is the hosting DG with the budget and the support services. And those services are then rendered to the Energy Department through a service level agreement, which details all the actions that need to be taken in terms of the support services, in terms of the CFO's office, in terms of the audit function. That was the agreement that is hoping in operation at the moment. During which this particular process also, this time, we've gone through the participation, like the DG indicated, on the NMOS, which is the National Macro-Organizational Project. There we sit among a number of other departments. I think there are six of them. The total departments that have been restructured. So as DME, we are part of that structuring. So our plans and whatever we do, it needs to abide by the terms of reference of the overall NMOS timeframe. As the DG indicated, I think he said something like, much as people tend to think that just because we are splitting and we're going into two separate departments, it's the easiest to do. I can promise you, ladies and gentlemen, all of the members, it's not. There are a number of steps which I think what we can do, we can actually present a report to which members can look at, and I said, but it's a very long process, what needs to be done to split the department. I'm not going to go through that now. So what we have done now, we have, as per the directive of the NMOS project itself, we have established 9 streams within the department. And honourable members, we are using the same resources which are already slim, number one, and also same resources where we have serious challenges of capacity because we have a very high level of vacancies. So we are using the same people to come and to try and split the department. So the 9 departmental work streams, they cover areas like
organizational scoping and review, infrastructure and asset management, labor issues, IT issues, finance and budget, change management and communication, human resource audit. In other words, what do we have in terms of the skills within the department currently, and what do we need? Talk about the issue of legal requirements and any other policy requirements. So we are using the capacity within the department to provide that. And I am happy to announce that as a department, we have been able to present to the NMOS what is needed at the time it's needed. The scoping, as I've already indicated, has been complete. This is the determination and analysis of functions to be split, assessment of current business support operations and process mapping, talks to HR capacity, and development of a business case on the split options. That is what has been presented to the ministers and approved. Last time we spoke to the honorable members when we were here on the 2nd of September. We did make mention that we had just completed the strategic plan for the Department of Mineral Resources. That was done in August, from the 19th to 25th of August. So from that process, as corporate services, in terms of the split, we have been able to address the way forward in terms of now the development of the organizational structures that speak to the strategic objective or the strategic direction of the new department. That process is almost complete. In terms of the time frames of the NMOS, we're supposed to present the proposed structures which already would have been approved by the ministers to the Minister of the PSA by the 30th of October, which is in a couple of weeks' time.
What is NMOS?
Sorry?
NMOS.
It's the National Macro Organizational Steering Committee. That is a steering committee that is headed by the presidency, DPSA, and National Treasury. So those are the people who actually decide our fate. Treasury in terms of how much that will give us, and also in terms of DPSA on the structure that you produce. So we've done the strategic plan, and out of the strategic plan, we've been able to identify and propose a structure. Last week, we had a discussion with the Minister of the acting DG of Energy, together with the Minister of Energy, and she has approved the structure, and we're in the process of presenting that to DPSA by end of next week. So we will beat the 30th of October time frame. With regard to DMR, we have just completed the interviews with senior management. We will be starting from next week discussing that with the DG and the Minister of Mineral Resources, and hopefully by the end of next week, which is also two weeks before the deadline, we'll be able to present to DPSA the new structure for the Department of Mineral Resources. Honourable members, that after that, once the determination has been done by the Minister of DPSA, then we'll be able now to start looking at the issue of job profiling and job evaluation. That's when it's going to start looking at the process of confirming job levels and remuneration thereof, and dealing with the final budget for the new department. The matching and placing process also will start immediately after, but once we've identified all the positions within the specific departments that are there, we'll then be able to go to the current resources, otherwise the current employees within the Department of Minerals and Energy, and say what resources can we tap for mineral resources and what resources can we get for energy. That's what you call the matching and placing process. And that process is going to take time. But to date, we've been able to negotiate with the union within the department in terms of the structure of that body, because everybody needs to feel comfortable that they are going to where they would like to go, and they'll be able to deliver on that. Once the placing and matching has been done, then we'll be able to address the issue of the vacancies, because we have a situation where people might not want to be in the same job that they were doing. They might want to be in other jobs, so they'll apply for the other jobs. others might look at promotions or apply for other jobs. So that process is only be addressed once we have placed everybody within the department or who's employed within the DME to either the Department of Energy or Department of Mineral Resources. So our plan, ladies and gentlemen, is to say that as at the as of the 1st of April 2010, the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Energy will be two independent departments with their own support services addressing their own regional offices. And I'm very hopeful that we are going to be able to meet that deadline. In conclusion, just take you on the three major challenges that you are facing with the issue of the split in the department. First one is the issue of job hopping. Support services, unfortunately, is one of those areas where it's easy to get a job in the next department because the kind of work most of us do mostly is almost the same. Since the start of the split of the department, since the announcement by the president of the split of the DME, we've had a very high level of people leaving the department. Others because uncertainty, others because they've seen enough pressures. So this is one of the challenges that we have, because once we're trying to maintain the level of employees that we have in the department, we have to face this challenge that people, they want to move. Unfortunately, at the current moment, we cannot employ people who don't have the budget, first of all, and we have not have an approval of any structures where we can actually put them. Also, other departments, of course, within the government are restructuring, so there are a lot of opportunities coming out there as well. The other challenge we have is the issue of financial constraints versus the recruitment retention of the skills. I'm sure that the CFO will talk through the process for the honored members in detail on the issue of what are the treasury plans in terms of providing us with our midterm review in terms of our budget, and also going forward, their plans going forward in terms of the provision of the budget for the new separate department. Of course, we have to comply with the time frames of the NMOS, like I've said earlier. So even if we were hoping to say to them, because we're 2 weeks early with the provision of the organizational structure for the two departments, we'd like you to move all your plans 2 weeks earlier, we might not be successful at doing that. But honored members, we are not going to stop. As and when we are ready, we provide the information with the hope that they will take us into consideration when they take their decisions early enough to start implementing whatever we are asking for. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, earlier on the DG has indicated that there is another engagement that he has to be at, which is unavoidable, unfortunately. But let me allow brief interaction with him on strategic questions, and then we come back to each department in terms, because there are still presentations that must come, so that when he leaves, he must have had the benefit of areas that members would want him to talk on. Can I open the floor? But to the DG, strategic questions, then the different branches will then handle them, each one. I note Honorable Ngele, Honorable Smith, Honorable Lucas, Honorable Ligani, in that complete.
Sorry, Chairperson, it is not through those bases what I'm going to say. It is just something else that I'm not comfortable about. You see, all these documents that I have, when someone is going to present a document, the other one, I think several times we have spoken to department to try and send the documents prior to presentation. This is really confusing. Sometimes you get a document now, like we did, and most of the presentation is not even here, not on the screen. We have to listen. And you waste time trying to find out what is it talking about, where is this document. And some of them are very fast. While you are still on page 10, he's on page 13. You can't catch up with him. can't anything be done? I'm sure we'll, this is a repetition of what has been said to the department, to send documents before we meet. This is confusing. We can't, no matter how clever people are, but this one knows. Whether it's done intentionally or I don't know, just to confuse us, I don't know, but it is not a good practice. It is not a good, we can't keep all this even said to us within less than an hour. Everything is here. Why don't you give us time to peruse and in your presentation, and then when you come in, we know what you are talking about. And it really, it's even worse when you are fast. Somewhere running a marathon, I know, I won't say who. I won't say who, Temba knows himself. While you are on page 10, Temba is on page 13.
It's Thabo, not Temba.
Thabo. Oh, you know the one who was running a marathon.
Yeah, because we don't have Temba yet.
Okay.
They relate Thabo. The closest relation to the TH is Thabo.
Okay, thank you.
Honorable Schmidt?
Yes, I have two serious issues, and one I think I'd follow on with what the previous speaker had to say. You know, I understand that this is a strategic plan, and it's got to be in very nice language and convey the idea and the expression. But, you know, and I have no problem with Mr. Ghazi at all. In fact, and I've just opened the one document just to illustrate the point, and I need to page to the second point. But, you know, what does it mean to say create an enabling environment for effective and efficient service delivery? And it is Mr. Ghazi here. It says improve service delivery internally and externally. Provide valid, reliable data. Reliable statistics published under, I can't really read what it is. Achieved monthly. You know, it really, with due respect, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, it is so wide that I'm saying I'm going to rebudget the whole country's budget. You know, the statement is so wide that I can read anything into this, basically. There's no concrete, tangible fact. And I'm not pointing at Mr. Ghazi. I'm indicating it as to the general gist of the issue. Maybe it's because it's a strategic plan. Maybe that would be the answer I think Pino is going to say. But the concepts are wide. The issues are broad. Maybe too broad. That's the feeling I get. But that's not really what I wanted to ask. The two issues I really wanted to ask was, there's a sincere indication, at least in the magazines and the relevant, Mining Weekly and those kind of issues, where there seems to be the indication that a lot of the BEE deals is under question mark. That some of them are, I think the term is used, under the water or something. I'm not an economist, but they're basically in trouble. And I get the impression that there's been at least some form of bailout, or that some form of bailout, I think is a term. I might be using it incorrectly, but I see the chief financial officer is looking at me with question marks. I think the term is bailout of these BEE structures will have to take place, either from banks or from governments or from IDC or from... What is the current strategic thinking and way forward in this regard? Then also on the more strategic issue, the AMEF. You know, I asked a question. I think I know it comes from Mr. Rocha, but I can't say it does. But I ask the question, in which regard did the exemptions of the MPRDA apply to which institutions? And I think one of it was a few municipalities, AMEF, and another institution I can't recall. And I asked for which reasons, and it says Section 106, Section 101. You know, I'm resting my case. I mean, you can't answer a question in that regard. But on that issue, what is the strategic thinking with regards to AMEF, you know, the state mining-owned company? We did have a discussion at the last meeting. Mr. Jacinta Rocha informed us, and we had a kind of vigorous debate with the chairman, including. It seems to me that there's a view that at least that the AMEF, as a mining company, if I understand correctly, that's a relevant mining company, state mining company, will compete on an equal footing. Now, what is behind it? Because at least it should be afforded or allocated mining rights to mine or to prospect or to whatever. What is the current thinking in terms of the AMEF at this point in time? Thank you.
Dear Honourable Lucas.
Maybe we should say that with the budget, the department has done extremely well, and that is we think that is a good thing, and you show that you manage your finances well. However, with the meltdown in the finances globally, we do know the small-scale miners who have been suffering. I don't see an end to the suffering. I wonder whether we couldn't come up with a concrete plan, because people have been able to get rights, but they haven't been able to successfully mine in these places. And I keep on saying this. Every time I speak about it, because I don't see much progress. There has been some progress, but I think it could be much better, and enrichment of much more people in the industry. The other issue is the illegal miners. You know, we went on that visit. We went to Welkom. But when we got to Barberton, things were in another situation. And we saw something very different there. And I think we need to look at this thing more closely. The other issue is the mining charter. I know that the people, the original owners, have been getting legal and doing all sorts of resistance to this. We need to come to some conclusion on that issue also. The other thing that I need to say, Mr. Chairman, how are we going to debate next year on the budget? Will there be two debates, or are we going to have one debate? Because now we'll have mineral resources, and we've got energy on the other side. And then finally is that we must also compliment the department for the 10 students they sent to Malaysia. I think this is needed. If there was more money, it could be improved, because this is what we need. It's education, upliftment, and people to be skilled.
Thank you, Honorable Bigani.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd also just like to make a request to the department that in the use of your vocabulary, please minimize the abbreviation, because some of us have to go to the back of the notes to just check on some of your terms. We are not yet getting used to them, because to you it's automatic language. To us it's still manual digging before we can catch up on some of the issues that you are discussing. My question is based on the... the budget has partly been addressed. I also feel that we need to go into better detail and explanation in terms of when we are saying you do not have the budget now because you are still attached to energy, or you are still sharing the budget with energy, are your plans then saying that as of next day you'll solely be speaking of DMR, or are we still going to be faced with a situation where we are still going to be having talks, in particular after 31st March 2010, are you still going to be relating to both energy and DMR in terms of your budget, so that you can start making out as to exactly where the challenges are or where the shortfalls will be in terms of being able to function as now an individual department away from energy? Then the other issue is, you mentioned a project. I think you've indicated that you have about 15 projects. But there is an indication from the 2008-09 report that you had, I think, 33 projects, if I'm not mistaken. But I came across the figure 33 of those projects. Now, what I'd like to know is there 18 out of the 33, or is there 18 new projects from the 33? And how are you monitoring or ensuring sustainability of these projects that you have passed from? How are they also accommodated in terms of the new legislation, particularly attached to DMR in particular, ensured? Then, besides the information sharing in terms of in the areas of skills development, or projects as well. Is there no financial support to upcoming, in particular SMEs or companies related to what you have mentioned in terms of youth and women? And if there is financial support, is that now also a plan for the future budget, or are there already some of them in place? And what accountability processes are there in place in terms of the past budgets, the past projects? There's just no information on that. And then generally about the presentations also, Chair, I'd really like to stress the fact that if I could even make mention of the part where the DG was mentioning, you know, on the mining charter, for example, we know that the mining charter is under review and there's developments that are supposed to come out of that mining charter. My concern is the fact that we put these statements on paper, but the practicality of those are not visible as to what has been done or what has been achieved. Saying that the mining charter is under review, but processes of the actual mining charter of what should be happening, for example, the issue on ensuring proper housing for people living around mines, I'm just mentioning one point, not being indicated of what exactly has been done or what exactly has not been done, so that you can be able to weigh where there's progress or where there's no progress, where there's improvement that needs to be made, needs to be looked into. That's just but one example that I'm putting there. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Makagula.
Thank you, Chair. Mine it will be directed to the DG. According to this annual report, I just want to ask DG that is still the DG also of the energy, or is only the DG of mining? Because seemingly to me, the DG is also the DG in energy. So he must just tell us directly that I am a DG in mining, or I'm a DG in energy, or I'm acting where, I'm working where. I think we'll be fine.
Honorable members, we're seriously running out of time, but let me allow you one
question.
That
is more question to the DG. Just to add to this mining charter issue, can you please tell us, at least to give us an indication, when can we expect it? Because if they say towards the end of, you see, it doesn't make sense.
So that DG will give you all these questions and then you handle them at once. I think also some other strategic questions would be some strategic approaches and direction by the department. To use our mineral resources to push back the frontiers of poverty. I think this is quite central given the current situation in the country and globally, that we have a serious, you know, abnormal situation where the majority of the population in the country is entrapped in serious poverty. Meanwhile, we are said to be one of the countries that are rich in mineral resources. I think we'll just have to, you'll just have to take us into your confidence in this, whether there are some strategic thoughts in terms of this direction. Secondly, I think members have already alluded to the issues of mining charter and so forth. But in real situation, we don't see the necessary progress in terms of the transformation in this industry. Apart from those matters of the renewal of the charter and so forth, is there a radical thought on how must we fulfill this constitutional requirement in our country, that of transforming you know, our economy to be inclusive of all, you know, the citizens of the country. And then also, you know, members have spoken about the oversight visit in the on the illegal mining. And on that process, they came across the, shall I say, a situation which is not favorable at all, where you would see a sea of poverty within, you know, the mining area. The only buildings in the mining community, in the, within the mining area, will be the offices of the mines and the hostels. The rest within there is shacks. It's people who, you know, are basically showing that they are entrapped in this poverty. There are no infrastructure developments like your roads, like your schools, like your clinics. Is there a way? I know that you have tools such as the social and labor plan, codes of good practice, you know, the housing and living standards. But I think what we're looking for is, we've been talking about these things for many years now, and as you see out there, people are taken to the streets. It's now a daily occurrence. Nobody knows at what juncture will this be a mostly organized phenomenon, which will then present itself as a rebellion against the government in the country. Because people, you know, their patience has been stretched beyond, you know, the limit. Now I'm asking this so that we can then put our thinking arrangements, so that we look at strategically how do we then move forward. And lastly, DG, the whole question of job creation versus beneficiation industry. We hear that in a number of countries. The example that comes in my mind every now and then, it would be that of India and China, and that they have established, you know, sustainable beneficiation industries with employment records high as more beyond the million in some of these countries. And the irony there is that these countries don't have necessarily mineral resources, but they are beneficiating all kinds and all sizes of minerals. Now, can we not turn that around to basically establish the beneficiation industry in this country? If so, I hear that you're waiting for the cabinet approval on the strategy and so forth, but just to flag it with us so that we can then also mail it through. Thank you, Tisha.
Thank you very much, Chair. Unfortunately, these questions are too many. But let me start from the beginning.
I haven't
even started. You are too late. You know, Chair, in as much as I admit that we may have been at fault in terms of distribution of documents and all that, but with all due respect, Chairperson, I must point out that here what we're supposed to do was to just make a presentation on an annual report. An annual report which we have already tabled, which we therefore assumed that is in the possession of the honorable members, and therefore the honorable members have read the details thereof. That's why the approach was as well. It was not out of disrespect for this committee. We worked on that assumption that ours would just be to elaborate and explain to the honorable members only those issues that they feel that they need clarity on. And therefore, the presentation was just a formality, was just an introduction and an initiation of a discussion. So we apologize, therefore, if the expectation from the honorable members was that over and above that, we were supposed to have submitted documents in advance. We will do that next time. And again, Honorable Chair, I must also point out that to be fair to the department, this presentation was supposed to be on a straight plan. And therefore, what we were preparing all along was a presentation on a strat plan. And then it had then to be changed to be a presentation on an annual report. And therefore, the time that we had to accommodate the presentation of an annual report on the same day on which we are supposed to have presented what we call a strat plan was also a constraint. So it was also not out of disrespect for this committee, which we respect so much, that we had to do the things in the manner in which we did. So to that extent, therefore, Chairperson, with that explanation, please accept my apology. On the issue that was raised by Honorable Schmidt, that, you know, some of the words that we use abroad, etc., you know, it's also a function of the fact that we have to present an annual report. We were told that we have to use the language that is contained in the annual report. And the annual report doesn't only contain, you know, a practical business plan. It also contains aspirations. It contains dreams. And those dreams are normally cast in broader terms rather than in specifics. But if you look at the annual, at the whole annual report, you'll find out that insofar as we're talking about vision, we're talking about mission, we're talking about objectives, that's broad. Because we're talking about the aspirations of the people of this country, which have to be articulated by this particular department. But now when we go down now to business plans, that's where we talk about projects, as to how then do we translate those objectives into programs. So you'll find that there are those broad statements, but they are also specific. And if you read the annual report, you'll find that that is also contained in there. The AMF, I knew you were going to ask this question. Unfortunately, as public servants, we are not supposed to engage in an ideological debate, and because we are supposed to disabuse ourselves of any ideological notion. But be that as it may, you are human beings. Chairperson, what has happened is that we have since established that there is this company which was established in 1944. And this has happened in the context of a number of challenges that we have had in relation to, in particular, security of energy supply. We had a situation where Eskom, you know, had to run short of feedstock, precisely because of the fact that the mining companies, you know, had entered into long-term agreements, into long-term contracts with the companies to whom they supply abroad. And then the question that faced us, the strategic question therefore that faced South Africa was, can we then allow a situation where the availability of energy feedstock in South Africa is going to be dependent largely on the private sector, which at times is driven by other motives other than national strategic motives. So then it was then that we then looked at the history of the formation of this company, that this company was meant exactly to do that during that period. And we then said, here is the answer. We have this answer. And then we then said, okay, over and above this particular kind of an energy feedstock, what other feedstock do we need other than coal? Because it still held turbidite rights, this company. It was focusing on turbidite, because that's why it's owned by the Central Energy Fund now, because it had to deal with energy minerals, which were meant to convert coal into liquid fuels. So we then said, no, this was a good idea. Therefore, we have to extend the operation of this company into other strategic energy feedstock like uranium. You know, you go all over the world today, you find out that there is a specific national strategy on uranium, even on coal, by the way, because those are regarded as strategic minerals which are supposed to feed the economy of that particular country. So it was in that context then that we felt that we may be having an answer in this AMF. And the issue of the what are those things? Exemptions. You know, there are certain things that government companies, by virtue of them being government companies, don't have to go through those requirements in law. You know, for instance, the borrow pits that are being operated by municipalities. We've got a number of municipalities, by the way, which have now since got into that long list, into that list of companies that are exempted from certain provisions of the Mineral Development Act. Not all provisions. They are still expected to do environmental management. All the critical issues that have to be, all the critical requirements, they are still subject to. So what is interesting is that when there was just this outcry there in the public about the exemptions that are given to AMF, I then asked the officials in the department to find out whether there are any whether AMF has taken advantage of the exemption. Lo and behold, we discovered that they have not. They are applying like any other company, and we discover that in some areas they have even been rejected. Some of their applications have been rejected, just like any other mining company, which is why then they are going to exist in the South African mining economy just like any other private company. They are not going to be given any special treatment because they happen to be a state-owned mining company. They will continue being treated like any other mining company, and they will be subject to the South African laws like any other mining companies. But the question, therefore, that we need to answer is, given the fact that this company will be playing this particular strategic role, is it really necessary that they have to go through all those? Because in areas, for instance, where they have to, let's take an issue like an area where they have to provide a guarantee. That money is going to be provided by the state in any event. Given the fact that the state is self-insured in most instances, why would therefore this company be required to provide such guarantees if in instances where the state is supposed to insure itself, it is regarded as self-insured? So there are those questions. But because we cannot as yet fit the answers to those strategic questions within the current and existing legal framework, we have left it to continue to be doing that. Perhaps when there are changes in the law, we can begin to see what it is that we can do in order to accommodate that. And small-scale mining, we agree that with regard to small-scale mining, the honourable members just come back after I've just answered her question. I would have loved to hear the answer, but I'll come back to it at a later stage to your question. not the one about timber. So the small scale mining, you know, that's another area where we felt that the existing policy and the existing legal framework is not really very effective. That's why we are now saying that we are developing a new small-scale mining strategy, which can then talk back to the question that was asked about the issues of funding. Unfortunately, as the Department of Minerals and Energy, we cannot provide funding. We don't provide funding, even for these small-scale mining entities that we're creating, etc., 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 the funding doesn't fall within our legal mandate. Illegal mining, we agree, this is a serious threat. And by the way, as we speak, there is a meeting between among the law enforcement agencies, because what we discovered is that it is not going to be possible for us as DMR to deal with this issue, because our mandate is to deal with legal mining. Once it becomes illegal, it falls outside the scope of our mandate. It becomes a crime. And therefore, if it is a crime, it has to be dealt with by other departments. So we initiated, therefore, this process, an interdepartmental process, in terms of which the law enforcement agencies have now come together, and they are working on a plan, which we cannot be able to explain here, because we don't know it. We cannot alert those people there. That there is a plan that is in this format. That is. You may never know. You may never know. Perhaps it's you. Perhaps you are one of them, Honorable. Mining charter. The Honorable Chairperson knows this. We have been talking about it in his different role. When he was the chairperson of the transformation committee of the advisory board, it's something that we've been dealing with and trying to answer a number of questions for a long time. But the kind of answers that the honourable members seek definitely are answers that at this point in time I cannot provide, because those are the answers that are going to be yielded as the outcome of this process. So all what I can talk about, I'll talk about the process. I'll tell you about the review, because that is what is effect. As to what that review has yielded as yet, I don't know, because we have not yet looked at the report and therefore established what it is that is contained in that particular report. So it would be very, very, very unfair for me. I'll be misleading the committee if I can say that I hear that the mining companies are a certain percentage compliant with the provisions of the charter. No, I cannot do that. I've been misleading you. So all what I therefore beg the honourable members to do is to please, honourable members, can you be a little bit patient with us so that we get this report that is being worked on. You know, and there are time frames which we have set. The time frames that we have set is October. Before the end of October, I will then be able to come to you, honourable members, and say, here is the outcome of this process. And again, honourable members, we have to also appreciate the fact that I'm also constrained, because I'm working in the arm of state, which is the executive. So since I work in the executive, which you supervise, it is always critical that whatever I produce, I have to submit to the executive first, to the cabinet. And if now, I can assure you, it will be career limiting. If today I can come and say to the honorable members, here is the report, I'm giving it to you. Before the cabinet has even cited that, I'll be in trouble, because they are my bosses and you are their bosses. I can imagine if Jacinto takes a report to the minister without I having seen it. I supervise him. I must first see that report. He must not take it up there. I must quality control it, because I'm going to be whipped by the minister if that report is not good. So is the case even with this regard. Even after I have received this information, we intend tabling it to cabinet. And once the cabinet has seen it, we can then begin to come in and engage with the honorable members. So please bear with me. It's not that there's nothing that we're doing. We're doing something. And it's something beautiful we are going to see. Wow. It's just a matter of time. debate next year, whether we'll be having two departments, I can assure the honorable members that, you see, the problem that has happened is that we restructured government in the middle of the financial year. And unfortunately, as government, we work in accordance with the budget. And budgets are legal. And they start from a certain point up to a certain point. So if you create a department in between the financial year, it becomes a problem. But because the financial year will be ending in March, it therefore means that as from March onwards, now these two departments will be fully fledged, because right now it answers that question as to what DG am I? I'm a DG of DME, but people are going to ask, DME doesn't exist, but the accounting officer for DME still is in existence, because I'm responsible for that budget, and that budget is a legal entity. So I will therefore remain responsible for the budget of both mineral resources and the Department of Energy. The DG of Energy, if appointed, will then assume the responsibility for his or her budget at the beginning of the financial year. I'm still held accountable to Parliament on this particular budget. So in terms of management, I'm DMR. But in terms of accounting responsibilities for budget and all those things, I'm both.
So
that, it's definitely, you'll be amazed that it's really not DM Magari as it sounds. It works. You see, because we have to work in accordance with the law. That's why we had to find a creative way as to how we can then deal with this. We then created this model that says that the DG of DMR, because by law is responsible for this budget, will then be the hosting DG, who will be hosting all the administration. Program 1, which is administration, which is budget, is then hosted within the Department of Mineral Resources, and we have a service level agreement now with the other department. We are rendering corporate services to the Department of Energy. Until they create their corporate services and they have their budget, they will then be able to take full control of what. But I'm still earning, by the way, the same salary. abbreviations. Okay, no. Point taken. We will correct that. Point taken. Budget and split, this is what I've just explained. Projects on small scale mining and a new legislation. You know, the small scale mining is a function of the new legislation of the MPRDA. So, because we had a problem of illegal mining, these were illegal diggers. You cannot then go and say to these people they must stop eking out a living. So all what we then decided to do was to legalize them and put them within the ambit of the law so that they can act as responsible miners. So that's what we have now done, which is what I have acknowledged as Honorable Lucas was asking, that the current policy on small-scale mining is not working as we want it to be. That's why we are now revisiting that. So the new small-scale mining strategy now will deal with the kind of problems that the honorable members are raising. Charter review, I think I've answered that. Strategy, for pushing back the frontiers of poverty. You know, I agree that, you know, mining is taking place within communities that are bedeviled by poverty. And it is therefore important for us that as we look at transforming the mining industry, we must see what it is that we can do in order to deal with that particular issue. In the current legislation, and even in the charter itself, we have certain measures that were put into place which we thought that they would then be able to address that problem, the social and labor plan, etc., etc., etc. Now, you go and look at social and labor plan, you discover that, you know, these people, when they are making their applications, they are making certain undertakings where they say that this is what I will be doing in that community, and this is the budget that I have for that community. 1 year after, because now we've started a new process of enforcement where we conduct inspections, we go now in loco to go and check all these things, whether they are there. It's shocking what we're finding there. It's shocking because it is not there. These things that they are saying, they are not there. And which is why now we are beginning to say that we have to interpret the law in such a way that it must have effective teeth. And that's why we are looking at how we can then use the provisions of Section 47, which says Section 47 provides that the minister can revoke the license if the conditions of the license have been breached. Since it was therefore the basis upon which we granted you the license that you will be doing the social and labor plan, and your social and labor plan entails the following, and we discover that you have not done that, we believe that we can then be in a position to invoke the provisions of Section 47. The same applies with regard to fronting, the BEE. I'm sure you have seen it in the newspapers, Sima and Jag and all those things. You know, where we grant a person a license because he or she is saying that I have these bandits, I've got these Africans who have. That betrays my age. I've got these people who are historically disadvantaged South Africans, and they hold this particular percentage in this company. And then we say that, oh, well, if that is the case, you are compliant with the requirements of the law and the requirements of the charter. And we say, here is your license or here is your conversion. They go there, outside, and then they say, hey, bring back my 26%. Bring back my 26%. A year after, you discover that that 26% is non-existent, which was among the requirements that we thought we had ticked and said that it has been met by the applicant. Because, and then people tell you that, no, this is a capitalistic society, I'm free to trade, you see, in any manner, you know, that is in the best interest of commerce. But you take advantage of the provisions of the law, by the way. This is a if this is capitalism, B is a facilitated capitalism. It's not purely the operation of the market there. So you cannot therefore use the market as an excuse in order to thwart the objectives of the BEE. So there are those things which the honorable members have to look at, because those are some of the things that may be yielded by the review of the charter. But again, we are also the policy component of the department is also looking at the practical experiences of implementing the MPRDA. Whether the MPRDA as it currently stands, you know, it serves the purpose that was envisaged by those mothers and fathers who created it in 2004. So those are the things that will soon be coming to the honorable members on. There is we assist these matters almost on a daily basis, and soon we'll be coming with the practical experiences that we have had in the application of this law, and therefore what changes the honorable members have to effect in this article, including what can be done for communities. Job creation and the beneficiation strategy. Yes, Honorable Chair, I agree that it is indeed an irony that the country that produces so many minerals is not beneficiating them. But there is also an ideological opposition to beneficiation, which the honorable members will have to be seized with. But as soon as the cabinet approves this document, we'll bring it to the honorable members, and I'm sure you'll be able to even call public hearings so that we can begin to interact on this. Because the beneficiation strategy seeks exactly to do that. It seeks to do exactly that. And of course, there will always be resistance. There is no change that we have effected in this sector without some form of resistance, which of course the Honorable Chairperson is natural. That if your vested interest, it will be irresponsible of those owners of the means of production if any action that seems to be threatening them, they would just simply welcome it with the open arms. So we must always engage, persuade, and discuss with each other. I think that ends the question that, and I think these colleagues of mine will remain to engage with some of these articles. Unfortunately, I have to attend a cluster meeting.
Sorry.
Last
question about BE deals being underwater.
Oh yes, the BE deals underwater. You'll be dealing with that. Oh no. Oh okay. Yes. That's true. Some of them have been able to come back to us to say to us that, look, I was a 51% holder in this project, but now because of this financial meltdown, the banks that I owe are threatening to foreclose. I have now entered into an agreement with my strategic partner, who is stronger financially, that I will now dilute my 51% to 30%, so that I can use the proceeds thereof in order to pay the bank and at least to keep the bank at bay. And in such circumstances, you know, we come to the party and we grant them the session in terms of Section 11.
To
the strategic partner. You see, the strategic partner who happens not only to have, you know, because the way that most of the deals are structured is that you have a BEE who normally come with a technical stroke strategic partner, who then has the financial muscle. And because this strategic partner normally holds a small percentage, we allow him or her to increase the percentage he's holding in a particular project, so that the BE can dilute and get money which he is not going to use to fund his lifestyle and buy those sharp shoes, but which he then uses in order to pay the debt. So there are creative ways where we but the bailout, we don't bail out. We don't.
Well, thank you, DG. I think given your time constraints, you say that you're leaving a competent team behind that will be able to handle further interactions. So, therefore, we can release you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And continue after a tea break. Who's going to be acting in your absence?
This one was next to me.
and continue after a brief tea break with the remaining branches that must still present. Can we take a 5-10 minute break, honorable member?
Thank you, Chairperson. The next presentations will be one on mineral regulation, and the last one will be by the CFO. I'll try and be as slow as I can, and wherever there are terms that we are the only ones who understand, I'll try and explain to them to the members. Honourable members, Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. What I'm going to say now for the first 1 or 2 minutes is not contained, on the screen. But again, it is in the context that we had understood that the DMR had already submitted the annual report to Parliament, and we had assumed that you would have the documents before you. So what I'll repeat with you, just to guide you, is what the purpose of the branch is and what the strategic objectives are. And then I'll follow with the details in terms of what we have been able to achieve or not achieve. The mineral regulation branch, our key purpose is to regulate the mining sector, basically to achieve two specific objectives. One is transformation, and the other one is sustainable development, in addition to the other administrative work that we do. So the presentation will in the main try and show to you what is it that we have been able to achieve in the context of the two, which is transformation and sustainable development. As I go in the presentation, there are four key strategic objectives. Number one is to redress the results of past racial discrimination or past imbalances, which is generically, we use the terminology as transformation. Number two, we're going to actively contribute to sustainable development and growth. Three, create an environment for effective and efficient service delivery. And the last one is to govern the minerals and energy sectors to be cleaner, healthier, and safer. For the purpose of this branch is focus on the cleaner relating to environment. So healthier and safer is the inspectorate. Let's go to my presentation. Is if you have the document before you, is a continuation of mineral policy presentation. It's on page 5. And as we go, there are always two slides per page. So I'll indicate you which page we are, and then proceed and indicate you whether it is the top or the bottom, 1 or 2. Then I think we'll go 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2 until the end. In the context of redressing the past imbalances, the tool that we use, which is mandated from the law, Mineral and Petroleum Resource Development Act, is the licensing process. And in order for us to facilitate or drive transformation, one of the ways that the DMR, apart from the general 26% that comes with any other application, the position that we took from the branch is that we had to select or target the number of HDSA, and by HDSA we mean at least not less than 51% controlled companies would want to, per region, we had specified the number of companies that the regional offices would drive for. For 2008-2009, generally for HDSAs, we have granted both prospecting and mining rights in 152, and these are targeted. So we have to determine that each region is going to have so many licenses that are going to target for HDSAs when they apply. And for women, we had targeted 34. Again, it was per region, that each region had a specific number to drive. That one is one of the ways of driving transformation, is through the licensing process. But the other element has to do with education, information sharing. Because one cannot just assume that because you have a license, therefore transformation is going to take place. You must, on a continuous basis, have to engage with the stakeholders so that they can gain a better understanding of what is it that government wants to achieve. In the context of this, we organized workshops within the regions again. Number one, it was basically meet the regulated. Each region had to organize a workshop where they would meet with the mining sector and explain to them the purpose of transformation and how far have we gone. That one was with established companies, and sometimes deals would also come in. But also for the purpose of BEs, we also had to organize specific workshops where we would call them empowerment workshops to basically take them through the licensing process, the challenges that we face, the issues around fronting, so that they then become aware of what is it that they're doing right or they're doing wrong in the context of transformation. All in all, the other figures will come. We conducted 54 workshops. The remaining 16 will come down, which has to do with internal workshops within the DMR, the branch, in order for us to improve capacity of the officials to understand the regulatory framework. We're going now to the second strategic objective, which has to do with our contribution to sustainable development and growth. Now, the tool that we use here is what we call the Social and Labor Plan. Social and Labor Plan is a regulatory tool that has got in it three main or key programs. Number one deals with local economic development. Number two deals with human resource development. And the last one deals with management of downscaling. In other words, the key objective of the last program is to ensure that over the long run, that mining companies start preparing themselves for the day in which the minerals are going to be depleted and there is no exploitation of minerals anymore, but also in trying to deal with the current challenges that we face as a result of the global the downturn. As I've explained, Social and Labor Plan is the tool that we use. In the context of Social and Labor Plans, which we have not indicated here the number, companies commit themselves to doing certain things, and as the DG indicated, there are some that do, others that don't, because those who don't is because they just want to get the license. But we can also indicate to you that in 2008-2009, from the social plans that we have evaluated, there were at least 31 infrastructure development projects within the social plan, and they included a number of projects, some dealing with multipurpose centers, clinics, libraries, improvement of schools, training centers, water supply, sewage, treatment of water, others, depending on the choice of communities related to bakeries. So these are just some of the projects that we've been able to identify. So this has to do with the aspect of social and labor plan relating to sustainable development around improving the quality of life of our people. I understand and know that there are still challenges around the mines
where is a sign of prosperity, but is also surrounded by a sea of poverty. This is a challenge that we will face for quite some time. But oftentimes when we do this, we have to contextualize. Social and labor plans came into operation in 2004. And when we go out and do oversight, we may be dealing with a project that was there before 2004. And even if mining rights may have been granted after 2004, some of them may not have been started yet in terms of the plan, or others that failed to implement them. The other aspect of sustainable development, which has to do with our role as inspectors. So we grant licenses. There is an element of enforcement that we have to do. And part of that enforcement process is the number of inspections that we conduct. We had conducted, in as far as environment is concerned, we conducted 1,742 inspections. EMP means Environmental Management Programs or Environmental Management Plan. Environmental Management Program relates to mining rights applications. Environmental Management Plans relate to prospecting rights application and mining permit applications. In relation to the viability of a mine, which is conducted by our Division on Mine Economics, we conducted 304 inspections. PWP means Prospecting Work Program. In other words, Prospecting Work Program is the company's commitment on how are they going to conduct prospecting, over what period, in what phases, and how much are they going to spend on it. MWP is a Mining Work Program. Again, it is a document, that a commitment where a company tells us we are going to mine over the next 30 years. This is the rate at which we are going to mine in the following phases, and this is how much money we are going to invest in this mining project. The reduction of government environmental risks and liability. These are inherited legacies, environmental legacies, where prior to 1992, 1st of January, it was not a statutory requirement that mining companies had to conduct environmental management. The Minerals Act that was repealed in 2004 introduced environmental management in the mining sector. So there are a number of unrehabilitated, what we call ownerless and derelict mines, that the government then takes up the responsibility. Since 1992, our main focus has been on asbestos because of the health implication of asbestos. Possibly one day we are going to expand, because there is a lot that we have to do. A preliminary study conducted by the Council for Geoscience has indicated that there are potentially 6,000 unrehabilitated sites, which possibly one day government will have to take up the responsibility of rehabilitating them. So there is a lot that we will have to do. We have currently five projects under implementation, and as we indicated here, 8 will come in the next financial year. But also, as part of our sustainable development and our contribution to growth, our systems have to be up to scratch. And this is an element that you'll always find in our strategic plans, not because things are necessarily wrong or bad. It is because we want to commit ourselves to a continuous improvement. And this serves as a reminder that as this department, what was good last year may not necessarily be good this year, and we have to always try and improve. We have all the necessary systems and controls in place, and this is attested by the fact that our Auditor General reports have been clean, and this is part of the commitment that we have. Going to page 7, as again I'm repeating, that the Auditor General, and as our contribution to a clean report in the Department of Mineral Resources, each branch and commit itself to making sure that every finding that the Auditor General does, or internal auditors, that during the course of the year, the department commits itself to addressing it. And as a branch, this is what we have done. Everything that was raised, either by the Auditor General or by the internal auditors, in terms of their management reports, we then commit ourselves to addressing it during the course of the year. And that is why, at the end of the financial year, we tend to have clean reports, because we work on it during the course of the year. In line with the splitting, which we had already started the process before, and the DG has indicated, that the branch, also in the context of improving our service delivery, in other words, the licensing process, we always keep on relooking at the structure and see whether the structure and the staff complement as it currently stands is the most appropriate for us to deliver services. PricewaterhouseCoopers is looking at the structure of the branch, but then it has been brought in line with the splitting process. And whatever is going to be achieved, Deputy DG Corporate Services has taken you through the processes. And as far as the vacancies are concerned, we have committed ourselves to maintaining an 80% vacancy. In other words, 80% of our posts are filled. Only 20% are vacant, and this is what we have been able to achieve. We also normally always go through the process of looking at whether there, within the branch, there is a mismatch between what we have and what we need in terms of staff complement. And what we have been able to conclude is that what we have in terms of staff complement, not necessarily in terms of numbers, but in terms of matching personnel requirement with qualifications and skills. And as far as that alignment is concerned, for 2008-2009, we can inform the committee that there is no mismatch. And this is the process that we also follow through when we do recruitment, that we don't want to bring, when there is a need for an environmental officer, we don't bring someone with a BA political science to do environment. When there is a need for law, we don't need bring someone with environmental qualifications to do law. So we try always to match the post requirement with the qualifications and the skills required. Experience they'll gain as they come in, because if we were to only call upon experience, we would then be creating a challenge, because we would not be employing people. Because we don't find people trained in mine environmental management. We may find people trained in environmental management. People trained in mine environmental management, they acquire their experience within the DMR. So if we are then to say we are looking for people with 20 years experience in mine environmental management, would be defeating the whole purpose. So they come in without experience. Only those who are appointed from within would then come with experience. The ones from outside, unless they come from the mining sector, they would come with zero experience in terms of mine environmental experience, but they may come with experience generally in terms of environment. So, Chairperson, this is what we do. But also, as I indicated earlier, in the context of the workshops that we conduct, I indicated that there were 54 conducted. This one, in order for us to improve capacity, we as officials within the branch, we then train each other. So we don't necessarily rely on academic institutions or private service providers to tell us what we know already inside the branch. We use the expertise that we have within mineral laws, within environment, within mine economics, that from time to time we have lagged behind a little bit this year. But in 2008-2009, every quarter, the different specialist units would meet to exchange experiences, and in that process would be then training them. One issue that has also been a very hot topic in the past, especially at least until 2006, was the number of applications that either were not granted or that they were delayed. We can tell to you here that as far as the processing of applications is concerned, and this is on page 8, 2008-2009, there were no backlogs. It does not mean that we don't have challenges. The fact that there are no backlogs doesn't mean that all the staff complement is up to the right level that we want. It's just that we had to find ways in which we had to deal with applications. Oftentimes, we had to temporarily transfer officials to go and assist other regions where they are facing challenges, which then creates additional challenges in terms of finance. Because in terms of the plan of the year, it was never intended to move officials around. But we cannot constrain ourselves with that argument that there is no money, therefore we cannot do anything. When there was a need, we then move officials so that they could go and help the other regions. And this is how we have been able to address the issue of processing applications within the prescribed time frame. Also, as a way to assist the sector to understand the regulatory framework outside the mining law and the regulations, the branch had committed itself to develop guidelines. We developed three guidelines, two of them related to the prospecting work programs and mining work programs, and the third one related to the social and labor plan. It is very easy to say, but the law is there. They should just understand. But we must also understand that the mining companies is not made up of lawyers only. There are officials who are specialists in other areas. And we had to develop a document that would help them understand the regulatory framework. In order also for us to have an effective regulatory system, which it is a double-edged sword, because when you don't have an effective regulation, you create an environment of lawlessness, and you are blamed. If you put your foot down, investors also complain that the regulatory framework is rigid. So it is a balance that one has to strike, where you don't create an environment of lawlessness, but also any investor, be it local or foreign, that they know that when you come and mine in this country, that there is this concept of rule of law. And rule of law is not always soft. There is an other element to it, that if you commit yourself to complying with rule of law, there are times when it is going to come and hit you badly, and you have to deal with it. Because our view is, a regulator only visits you with a hammer because you have invited the regulator to do so. The regulator would not go out and just seek. Now, if we come after you, it's because there are certain things that you have not done that you committed yourself to do. And as a regulator, will come with a hammer. You may or may not like it. It may then appear in the newspapers that the DMR is being too harsh. But it is part of rule of law. That we it's like dealing with speed limits. Some of us like to drive above 120. If the traffic cop stops us and issues us with a fine, we shouldn't blame the traffic cop. We should look at ourselves as to what is it that we have done wrong to allow the traffic cop to stop us and issue us with a fine. And this is the same way that we deal with mining companies. They invite us, and we then deal with them accordingly. Now, the next, which is on page 9, the first slide, where we say that not all rights registered within 30 days. That one should not be seen as a failure. That one is an indication of a challenge that we have with the regulator. In terms of law, rights are required to be registered within 30 days. But not everything that comes in a quality that calls for us to register. So what then happens? Companies lodge the right for registration. Mining Titles Office goes through the document and then comes to the conclusion that this registration cannot take place. They then reject it, in which case it has to go back. So what would have counted as 30 days then goes back to zero. But also in addition to that, the other unfortunate part is there are companies who do not lodge right for registration within the prescribed 30 days. And in some instances, then after the 30 days, they come back and request for condonation. And unfortunately, the provisions in the law are peremptory, where they have, they must lodge within 30 days. If they then come after the 30 days, it puts us in a severe predicament, where it becomes not even difficult, becomes very impossible for us to register the right, which is outside the 30 days. And sometimes we then have to tell the person concerned that please go to court, and if you then get an instruction from court to register it, we'll do it. But you cannot now force us to do a registration where you yourself know that you are in the wrong. The other one is also, in the context also of the registration, is the recording, which is on page 9, the last transparency. Again, this has to do mostly with individuals, companies who apply for mining permits. Mining permits are permits for small-scale miners. They are required to lodge their permits for recording within 14 days. And unfortunately, not even most of them, all of them basically don't come back. And this is a provision that in the context of us having to do a review, a re-evaluation of the MPRDA, we might have to come back again and say, what purpose is this 14-day serving if the ones who obtain a mining permit are not really coming? What is it that we have to do in order for us to possibly not force them, but assist them to come and see the value of them having their permits recorded? Chairperson, this is the end of the presentation of the Mineral Regulation Branch. It's the contents of the annual report are more expansive than what has been done here. But we just wanted to highlight to you, number one, is the achievements. Number two, the areas that we are facing challenges. And number three, those areas that we may not have achieved as we would want to have achieved. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. The last presentation. Can we appeal that at least the latest by 1 o'clock we should be done, so that the financial person take us through in the best possible way in the shortest possible time. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. I'll try and do this within less than 10 minutes. It's a very short presentation. Chair, Honorable Chair, the presentation from the Office of the CFO will really focus on five main areas. I'm going to take the committee briefly through the purpose and the composition of the components, highlight some of the key achievements in the period under review, also followed by some of the key challenges that we've experienced, which have led to non-achievement of certain objectives. And I will then take the committee through the budget of the department, just to give a bit of meat to what the DG introduced earlier on in terms of our performance on the budget. And then lastly, just a comment on the medium-term expenditure framework process that then informs the strategic planning or finalization process. Honorable Chair, in terms of the branch itself, the main focus for this branch is really to support the department in as far as financial supply chain and facilities, as well as information management services are concerned. And these are the key components that reside within this particular branch. We have a supply chain management that deals with issues like demand management, logistics management, as well as disposal management. information technology that looks at the ICT infrastructure, networks, desktop management, as well as assistance in terms of user computing. Then we have the systems development and maintenance component that really looks at application development, maintenance, as well as SLA management. Then we have a financial planning component that looks at budgeting, financial reporting, overall issues of internal control, including issues around coordinating the activities of the Auditor General. That those are the people who really interact closely with the Office of the Auditor General. Then expenditure management that looks at payment of suppliers and employees in terms of salaries, S&Ts, travel management. And lastly, Chair, is the transport facilities and record management that really deals with issues of registry, government transport, subsidized cars, and facilities such as office accommodation. Having given that overview of what we do in the CFO's office, in the year under review, our key achievements, the DG has alluded to the first two around the budget performance, that when you look at our performance, it's quite in line with the acceptable norm where we're sitting at around 1% underspending. And this trend has been consistent over the last 4 years. So we are quite happy to share that information with the committee. As I said, I will go into the details with the specific numbers involved, breaking it down in terms of the branches and the history around that. The issue of the clean audit report, this is something that we are really proud of. We feel that we've been doing rather well in that area, and we commit, as the minister has committed in her budget vote, that even for this year under review, we are planning to maintain that particular record, and we are happy to report back that indeed that has been the case. In terms of reporting, we have complied with all the PFMA related requirements in terms of reporting both to National Treasury, to Parliament, and as witnessed or evidenced through the clean audit report, our reporting has been quite good or accurate in other ways. The other achievement is around the ICT infrastructure plan. When I get to the challenges, I'll also highlight other issues that gave rise to the need to have that information and communication technology infrastructure plan. Historically, government departments have not necessarily invested much on ICT or information and communication technology. And what we are finding now is that our business is driven by technology, or technology is playing a significant role in terms of supporting the business. And some of the infrastructure that we are currently working with does not support the business adequately. So we have had to come up with a plan to say, how do we upgrade this? And we are happy to say that some of the areas that we were supposed to focus on for this financial year have been done, obviously taking into account the availability of resources. Linked to that was the issue of the master systems plan that really looks at what does the business require going forward, how does ICT support the business. In other words, if Mr. Rocha has to execute certain aspects of the MPRDA, how do we then come in and support him as far as providing the necessary system support? So that plan was put together, and we have implemented some of the activities that are highlighted there. I must say that it's a long-term plan that looks beyond just one financial year. So it's going to be continuing in the next 2 or 3 years. The next point is around the supply chain management framework which has been introduced through a piece of legislation, is now incorporated into the Public Finance Management Act, where we have completed the implementation of that particular framework, which really assists us in terms of improving our procurement processes and begin to promote some of the imperatives of the Constitution as far as issues of fairness, transparency, equity, and competitiveness are concerned. So we are happy to see that that implementation process is coming to an end, and we're beginning to see fruits in terms of that. Linked to that is the approval and implementation of policies within finance and supply chain management. This becomes critical to ensure that there is consistency in the manner in which we do business. And that links closely with the issue of the Auditor General's report, because the moment you don't have policies as a department, you then begin to see people doing things the wrong way, and which then leads to qualified audit reports and those non-compliance issues. So those areas were prioritized to say we need to have policies within finance, within supply chain management, and that has been put in place. And of course, we will continue to look at those and review them. The issues that really keep us awake at night is firstly our inability to attract and retain skilled personnel, particularly on the IT side of the business. It is a challenge, and I'm sure my colleagues would testify to that. You would find that for you to be able to attract someone who can be able to give network support, for argument's sake, that person in the private sector would probably be earning somewhere close to what the DG would be earning. So that becomes a huge challenge in terms of our ability to actually get that person in to give that particular support to the business. And these are critical skills that are needed. And so what we are doing in terms of trying to address that, we are looking at a cost-sourcing model where we can get private sector to come in to say, how can we assist you, but at the same time start building capacity internally with some assistance from my colleagues at Human Resources. We are confident that we are going to overcome that. I've spoken about the aging ICT infrastructure. That is really starting to impact upon the department as a whole. Just to give an example, you have got some regions where to open an application system, it could take you somewhere between 5 to 10 minutes just to get that screen up and running, and that is linked to the response time on our network, because the bandwidth that we currently have is just not able to respond to the major volumes of data that is running through the network. So that's an area that for this financial year we are really looking at making sure that gets upgraded. Of course, funding becomes the next issue, because to get more performance you have to pay more money. Office accommodation is another headache. Historically, I'm sure honorable members would agree that government departments have been seen as these organizations where when you walk in, they are characterized by old, dilapidated buildings with old furniture, dark corners and dirty carpets. Now, these things impact on a number of things. You currently having a workforce that is comprised of young generation, people who would want to be proud of the environment in which they work in. So those type of issues then tend to influence how we are able, our ability to retain certain skills and even attract, because the first impression when one walks into an office is, before you even interact with people, just looking at the building, you already create some kind of an impression. So we have really looked at that issue, and in the last year we have managed to make some inroads, but there is still a backlog in terms of really getting to where we would want to get. And lastly, linked to all of that above, we have to then do all of these things conscious of the resources that we have within our possession, and that becomes a challenge. But we continuously interact and engage National Treasury with some of the issues that would want them to fund us in terms of. And then, Chair, if I can move to the next slide. My apologies, on the screen the numbers look rather small, but I'm hoping that we'll be able to read that from the handouts that have been provided. Just to probably give some guidance in terms of how this is structured. Over here, this is the list of all the programs, and as the DG indicated in his presentation, these programs are inclusive of those that report or that fall within the portfolio of energy, like for example program 5, 6, and some elements of program 7. And then the second column is giving us an indication of the budget that was allocated in terms of the appropriation bill. And then the third column gives us an indication of, against that budget that was allocated, what was our actual spend for each program. And as you can see there, those are the variances that we've had. And the DG did highlight some of the reasons why we ended up with an underspending of that figure. But percentage-wise, we are quite satisfied with our performance, because that number sits at about 1% of the entire original budget. And the last column is just to do a comparison with where we were in terms of 7-8. You can actually see from 2.9 billion, our budget grew to about 3.7, and the spending is sitting at that figure there. So while there has been some growth, there's been some challenges in some areas, but in terms of our spending, we did quite well. We can move on to the next slide. This is now just giving a picture in terms of the history, that we are saying since the 2004 and 5 financial year, our performance against budget as expressed in percentages, the row at the bottom here, you can see that in 4-5 we had an underspending of 3.5%, that improved in the next year to 1.04, improved further to 0.93, and this year we're sitting at just over 1%. So there has been consistency and continuous improvement in terms of this process. And then the last slide, I'm not going to really go deep into this, because the DG has already covered much of what is said in this slide. That concludes this part of the presentation. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Chairperson, this concludes our presentation as DMI. Thank you. Thank you very much from the department. Honorable members, I know that we have limited time, but let us engage on areas of clarity and some inputs on the different branches. What I would want to do is to give us a benefit of reading through this report. The main report that is not yet in your possession, we've agreed with the committee secretary here. that will ensure the circulation of this report. Secondly, the circulation of the other four or five different state-owned enterprises annual reports, ranging from Geoscience, Mintec, State Diamond Trader, and the Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator, all of those reports be delivered into your PG holes or whatever arrangement that the secretary is going to enter, is going to make, and that we will on specific state-owned enterprises annual reports deal with them in terms of listening to their presentations and engage. But on this overall report, we will create space for further engagement with the department, given the fact that you had not had the benefit of going through, you know, the annual report. But for now, let me allow a free flow of pending questions. But once our time is up, I would then cut us off so that we then prepare fully for the sitting of the House. Let me open the questions to you. Any branch, in any, we're not going to follow any particular format. Honorable Makagule, Honorable Mikani, Honorable Chibela, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Bele, in that format, please.
And Kosi, Minister. My question, first, it will relate in health. You said illegal miners poses a major challenge to the health and safety, and then you didn't corroborate on that, so that we want to know that what's happening, and then what are the things that you are doing. And then in operations, the person who was presenting said Kuma beneficiations waiting for approval on the strategy, and then for how long? We want to know that, waiting for the approval for how long. And then also small scale mining, and then you tabulate that in the small scale mining there are 15 small scale mining that you have been assisted. So actually you speak about those people who are owning the mine, but you didn't speak about the jobs that has been created by those small scale mining. And then when we come to corporate services, corporate services is speaking about the bursaries and the sponsorship and Malaysia things. Actually, we want first to know that which Caldera did they use to pick up people or students whosoever that they've been sent to Malaysia. Did they spread all over the provinces, or they look a certain place or whatever? We need to know that. And another thing is that of you said people splitting is difficult. It make the department to be difficult. It's difficult to split, sis, when you're speaking about the cooperation service. You said it's very difficult, and to me, I don't think so, because when you're speaking about the splitting in the department, there are those who are doing the operational and those who are doing the support, and then those who are doing the operational already, they must be on this already. They know that I'm dealing with mine, nobody else, as I was employed. But to those who are dealing with the support staff, I think it's those people who
who can be so much, not even difficult. Mm-hmm. And then you said there is the difficult, and we want to know the difficulties on the splitting. Another thing is this thing you said. You said there is you train people, and you said no, people are moved to the certain department or to the certain industry. But the question is one: this Malaysia things, and these two people has been training to France. You said it started long time, and if it started long time training people, and you said you have some other things that you are doing in your corporate services, training the people that are working there. So for me, you train people, especially those who are sent to Malaysia, and when they come back, they go. So there is no any criteria that you as a department, that you make them to not moving away from any other department or any other companies. So I don't get it, because you said you started this program long time ago, and then we want to know that why people are moving to the department, whereas the department is wasting money training the other people. Lastly,
the final one.
Okay, no. Okay, I think lastly, Chairperson, I've been here. The deputy, the DCG, spoken about the 54 workshop, but it didn't. It's not here. It's not in black and white. This 54 workshop, but the other things is in black and white. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Migani.
Thank you, Chair. If I could go back to this document first. On mineral policy and promotion. Especially where the DDG was presenting, page 6. I'll just use page 6 as a reference. I'm worried, Chairperson, about the way the information is coming through to us. On issues of sustainable development and growth, the very layout of the slide itself, there seems to be blanks at the end of the columns, which in a way would say to me, gives the notion that not all information is given to us. When we're discussing this, you mentioned something about the use of a social endeavor tool. Now, we don't have a picture of this tool. We don't understand how it works. Is it something that is used perhaps to measure your success, or is it something that is used to be operational in ensuring that the functions are carried out? And if I would have expected that if you're going to tell us about results, progress, and verification, giving a figure doesn't necessarily mean there's been results. So I'd be more interested in detail in terms of the way these graphs are laid out. But at any rate, it does appear to me, Chair, that with the transitional issues that are taking place for DMR, that every time we're going to sit here and discuss theory for now, because they have challenges in terms of their policies, strat plans that are not ready, with the strat plan being able to at least lead us to issues of your structure, your organogram, and so on, which I think will be able to have you attaching issues to your budget and obviously to a plan of actions as a department, DMR. It does give me the impression that in a way, we are just talking until the time arrives, because somewhere, somehow, you are able to indicate that you are able to implement certain things, you are able to be operational in certain areas in the department, but somewhere, somehow, you get stuck because of not having a clear mandate in terms of your budget being sufficient. So it does give me the impression or the reasoning to say that until such time that we're able to have the strat plan laid out to us in detail with a budget attached to it, the department should prioritize more its challenges. Okay, the CFO has indicated at the present moment what the challenges are, but overall in the department you are given the impression that you are more impressed with the fact that it's a nice achievement, with the fact that you don't have a negative audit result, but it does give me the impression that the problems are more than the success of that audit result. So if the challenges could be laid out straightforward, simple challenges, even offensive challenges for that matter, being laid out and actually put on paper to us, and plans of action being indicated as to what is the next step. Because for one, the very issue of the policy formulations, the legislations that need to be reviewed and changed, but as long as those are not yet in place, it gives great difficulty in us being able to realistically say there has been achievements. It's just a comment.
Thank you, Honorable Matula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, mine is on the days. The 30 days of registration as well as the 14 days. What happens to those people if they have sent their applications and waiting for those days, and they're supposed to know that the 30th day or so on, those things, the certificates are already there, they are being granted permits or whatever. What happens to them, especially with the small scale mining, miners who are not quite qualified like the big bosses? The other one is the constraints on the offices. Young people want clean places and so forth. I just wanted to know, because of you spoke of the budget, what is Public Works doing? Is Public Works not helping the other departments to do some other things in the offices? And with the health, I see, what is it called, PTB, the figures are very high, and seeing that the figures are so high, we know that the closeness of the people being together, if somebody coughs and the other one is there, then the TB goes, infects the other person or the other people. Can't the department try and force the mine houses to have villages where people can live as single quarters or so, not to be in the same house? Because we know that by being together, you won't really get rid of this TB. And it is really killing our people. People are really dying because they don't know what to do. They don't know where to go to. They must be there. Whether you're sick or not, then you just have got to be there. The other question which I'm interested in, Mr. Ghazi, is I see there you've got heat. What is it? It's heat disease. I just wanted to know what that is. Is it that the mine does not comply with the proper way of having ventilation, then it gets over hot in the mine? Is it in that way? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's every time with the budget that one realizes the extent of the department, because if you look at the mineral policy document, it deals with everything and anything within the department, from environmental issues to inspection of mines, to impact of the mining charter, to beneficiation. So it's got a very wide ambit. And but you know, it's pity I didn't ask the Director General, but maybe one should, Mr. Chair. I remember within the first few months of the previous term, we took a week or a long weekend or something, and we had a discussion as to the different entities, and then it was still the Energy Department. So we put in a good point of view in order to appreciate what the department does or doesn't do, and maybe to follow up with some form of visit to the head office, to regional office, one or two, to the Chamber of Mines, to go to see the impact of or lack of impact of a social labour plan, to see it in real terms. You know, it's someone said just now, it's good to do it and discuss it in a air ventilated environment, but it's another thing to really go and see what it's all about. So that would be the first issue or comment I'd like to make. The second thing is more particular. With the split of the department, and I think the department or the president made the announcement on the 10th of May, I think was the date on which the minister was appointed. There was a time period, I'm not sure whether it was the end of June or somewhere, where any there was a question mark at least over the legality of any application approved during that time, since the 10th of May to possibly the end of May or June, where there was a question mark. I don't know whether that's been raised and dealt with in the NMOS, and whether there was in fact a problem, and if so, what was it addressed? The second issue, was there any applications by, well, let me put it this way, as I understand it, any mining company who had mining rights and were busy mining, or at least mining rights, had to apply before the 1st of April 2009, otherwise those mining rights would lapse, if I understand correctly. Were any of those mining companies, major mining companies, mining as of the 1st of May 2004 and 1st of May 2009 passed, and you know, let's say the Beers or Anglo or Goldfields didn't apply, and therefore they're basically mining illegal, or is there no such possibility or occurrence?
Thank you, Honourable Ngele. Quickly, Chairperson, somebody mentioned SAWIMA. I know there are problems. I know there are challenges in it. But while you are busy trying to solve that, can it please be prioritized? We need it. We now also want to know deeply about it. Even if it's not now, but can something be done about that?
Thank you. Over to your department.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start and the colleagues will then respond as we are sitting here. I'll respond to the 54. Basically, what I did, the 54 is adding 9 and 29 in page 5 of the policy, and then 16 in page 8. On the issue of the structure of the presentation. Unfortunately, we are dealing with the fourth parliament. We are dealing with the fourth parliament, but this is a report emanating from the third parliament. So it relates to matters that happened before the election. It is up to
let me go back. On the issue of the 54, Chairperson, basically it is in page 5 of the mineral policy presentation. There is a 9 and a 29. And then in page 8, there is a 16. We add all together, it will be 54. And they all relate to workshops. On the structure of the presentation, number one, the green... There are two additional columns. They are just additional columns. There is no information that is supposed to go there. And the proof of that is if you go to the beginning of the presentation, there is no heading. It is blank. So it means nothing was supposed to have gone there. On the general structure, this is the fourth parliament. The information that is coming to you emanates from the third parliament. So these are things that the DME, not even DMI, DME did up to the end of
March 2009. So everything started before that, 2008, 2009. So we could not have moved away from what was then the approved structure of the presentation. That is why it is coming to you in a format that is, that it is. As a committee, you'll have an opportunity to influence the structure of the presentation coming to you in relation to 2009-2010. That one you'll then play a major role in directing us as to how we should then present to you going forward. Otherwise, what will then happen, we are going to continue with what has been happening in the relation to the third parliament. So you have an opportunity to influence that process and the contents of what will come. That is why it has come to you in the way that it is. If you compare this PowerPoint presentation and the document itself, the annual report, in terms of the structure, the only difference that you see is that it contains the strategic objective of the DME, where we try to condense a little bit, where we are just focusing on the branches itself. But going forward, the DMR will not be rigid in relation to what we then have to report to you going forward. On strategic plan, it's not that we are not ready. Strategic planning is a process, and there is a time within which we have to come to the fourth parliament now and present to you the strategic plan. And in terms of the statutory process, will only come to you around March next year. And that is why we are dealing with the old in terms of the annual report with the new, but in terms of the new strategic plan, the time frame that we are allowed to come to you is only next year. So this is not a DMR create, but this is how the process. I think it will correct itself as we go in the time of the fourth parliament. On the issue of the split and Ms. Zungu, DDG Corporate Service will expand. A split is always a challenge. And I'm going to look at the human element that we tend to miss. And we can feel it. We can feel it when we as officials, who were formerly Department of Minerals and Energy, meet us colleagues who are now belonging to different departments. The interaction that you see of people missing each other. For the simple reason, this is a group of people who would meet almost so often. And I'm looking now at the psychological impact. When now, because of the split, and it's not a blaming, just for people to understand the challenges that one faces, now you don't meet anymore as colleagues belonging to the same department. You meet as colleagues working for government. So the attachment that you had before, when you were together in one unit, is completely different compared to the attachment that you have as colleagues working in different departments. And the way even we greet each other, it's as if people have not seen each other for a very long time. So there is that psychological, emotional element that one has to deal with. And that is why the bigger challenge that we have is in splitting corporate services. Because corporate services work as a unit. Now, how do you then come and say, in a directorate, human resource management, some people will go to energy, others will go to minerals. Now, for the mining and energy side, it may not have been a big challenge, because as a unit, we have been working separately already. There was branches relating to energy, and there was branches relating to mining. So taking those ones out, it may not have been a big challenge at a structure level. It may been a challenge at individual level, but at a structure level, it was not. When you go to corporate services, it is both at individual level and at a structure level. Because where there was one deputy director general, you are going to split into two. Which then means some people will go to policy, to resources, others will go to energy. So there is always going to be a challenge. And we'll have to know how to manage it.
because the implication would be if we don't manage it properly, some people will then start leaving because of the fear of the unknown.
So the challenge is more a recognition on their part that we are dealing with a split
is not a technical process. A split contains in itself emotional and psychological elements that as managers we must be able to manage it, and it has to do with change management. How do you manage change in an environment where a decision has already been taken that you don't belong in the same unit anymore? So this is basically, so what is being expressed here is not a challenge in the context that they don't understand it. It's a challenge in the context that we have identified this. We'll have to find a way to manage it. If we don't manage it properly, we're then creating problems. It's either for whichever department they are going to. This is basically what it is. Chief Inspector.
Thanks, Chairperson. The question on illegal mining, I think the last point on the slide just alluded to the fact that illegal mining poses a major challenge to health and safety. And just a few comments, I'd like to explain what we mean by that. Underground mining is an unnatural environment. You know, people go there, you have to put oxygen, air, and all those. So when you get illegal miners going there, starting fires, you're depleting oxygen. And concentration of carbon monoxide leads to levels of death that we've witnessed in Free State. So it's in that context. I mean, in this case, it happened to illegal miners, but it can affect even the legal operators. So it was in that context that the issue was raised. And maybe just latching onto the question of heat illnesses. It also related to that. Deeper you go underground, it gets very hot. Some of the deepest mines have huge refrigeration plants just to keep the environment habitable so that people can work in that environment. And the other complication is that we have different levels of heat tolerance. So heat illnesses could happen because of two things. Either tests before people are taken underground are done, medical surveillance, or health assessments before people are allowed to work underground are done, or it could be that the environment is not properly controlled in terms of bringing temperatures down, because it's very humid and hot. So those two combinations poses a big challenge. And then on TB, pulmonary TB, it's most common occurring TB in southern Africa. And the question was, can't we force the mines to maybe convert hostels into a living units? I was just referring to Section 100 of the MPRDA within 5 years. This is this year. The minister issued the housing and living conditions standards, which effectively guides mining operations into converting existing hostels into the living units, and where there are no hostels, to either give people allowances to live in adequate in environments that are proper and habitable, where you don't concentrate people. And on the other level, at the inspectorate level, we're working together with Department of Health. As members would be aware, Department of Health engaged the World Health Organization recently to assess TB programs in the country in the light of XDR and DRTB. And we're engaging with them. They've reviewed the National TB Strategic Plan. And we're also in the process of reviewing the guidance note on the management of TB in the mining industry. So those were two questions that related to health and safety. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, there were two questions for policy and promotion. The one question on the beneficiation strategy, they approve by cabinet approves. Cabinet would have to approve that, so it's difficult for me to attach a time frame as to how long we're going to wait for the approval. And then the second question was on the 15 projects and the number of jobs created by those projects. I take it, Chairperson, we don't have the figures of hand, but those figures can be submitted as to how many jobs have been created from the 15 projects. We can give that information as soon as we are back in the office.
Is there something outstanding?
Chairperson, for the sake of time, I won't go through the issue of the difficulty of the split, because I was mostly referring to the administrative process, all that needs to be done. But on the issue of the Malaysian scholarship specifically, that process started almost 10 years ago, like I indicated. The way we do it is that towards the end of the year, what we do, we advertise in the media. Also, during the course of the year, we communicate with the schools, because it's got what we call a learnership program, learnership focus program that we do, where we go to the rural areas and look for the grade 10s and 11s and 12s to talk to at the stage. So that's where we communicate to them what the Malaysian scholarship is. But the selection is that we focus on saying that you must have at least one scholar per region. That is the focus, the minimum criteria that we use. And also, we go through the results together with the schools. They come in, we interview them. The panel is consists of the departmental officials, Petro SA, because they are partly sponsoring, as well as representatives from the Malaysian scholarship, I mean, for the Malaysian government. So it's a very wide criteria that we use. We try as much as we can to advertise. We even go to some of the sessions where they have a science weeks. We go and actually talk to them and present this project to the kids at that. But our main focus is on rural areas. Mm-hmm. On the issue of Sawima, unfortunately, ma'am, yes, we are doing the best we can. But for Sawima, department's involvement in Sawima is more of a facilitator. The problems that are experienced by Sawima at the moment are more operational problems. In other words, do they have their constitution? How do they address membership? How do they address the sharing of dividends? All those things, those are administrative and operational issues that can only be dealt with Sawima. But if they come to the department and request assistance, we do sit with them and we provide whatever assistance, or get them someone who can sponsor, someone can sit with them, for instance, and come up with their constitution, or come up with the way of distributing whatever assets they have, that kind of a process. But we don't get involved into the operations of Sawima because we are not members of Sawima as a department.
Thank you very much. Members, one thing quite clear is that we have not exhausted the discussions on this report. So it means we'll have to reschedule, and in doing so, we will take on board the suggestions from Honorable Smith and other members that we look at possibly a weekend and spend some more time to basically ground ourselves. I think you heard some of the members saying we're new. Some of the issues that are raised need more time to be elaborated on so that all of us are on board. But we will engage with the DG on those possibilities and then schedule accordingly. Secondly is that next Wednesday, we are going to be discussing with a view of adoption the report on illegal mining, because pretty soon it must go to the House so that it can then be debated and sanctioned at that level. We will ensure that it is circulated latest by Monday to members, so that then on Wednesday we are able to home in particularly on the recommendation part. And thirdly, one of the mining companies has been proactive. They have been trying to meet us. Eventually, I met them and they wrote us a letter. This company is Extract. They are requesting to brief the portfolio committee, particularly on the issue of the ferrochrome market versus the import, the exports to China, and other issues in terms of how they handle their business, including matters of transformation. So they didn't want to wait for the process of the charter review. They want to come and brief Parliament that this is what they are doing and this is how they do their thing. So next Wednesday we will handle both of those matters, the illegal mining, and then give space to extract to brief Parliament and engage them on whatever they shall have raised with us. With those words, let's thank the department for their attendance and the input they have given, responses they have made to questions, and indeed welcome back DG, and indeed on Wednesday when we discuss the matter of illegal mining oversight report, we would like to have the department being present so that on recommendations you can also make your contribution based on your own experiences and expertise on the work you have done in this field. I know the DG is always emphatic on this point that you are not regulating illegal mining, but it is at your doorstep, so we'll have to, one way or the other, find a way to handle it. DG, we're just winding up. We've gone beyond the time that we had set ourselves, but we were saying that we have not exhausted discussions on this report. We will give members the benefit of reading through the report, and we will reschedule. There were suggestions thrown around that we need maybe to look perhaps at a weekend so that we can thoroughly go through this report, which will also serve as a basis to inform all of us as new members, particularly in this field, so that we understand the department and going forward, so that when we do oversight, for example, visit your offices, we know exactly what to look for in terms of testing the information that we did receive. And we were saying that also that we will allow Extractor next week to come and brief us. They appear to be proactive. They didn't want to wait for the charter review process to be completed. They want to come and talk to Parliament, in particular around the issue of the ferrochrome market, where they've got some difficulties with the exports to China. And also they want to talk to us about their record in terms of transformation. So we will hear on Wednesday next week and engage them according to what they shall have told us. But indeed, of course, we will also, after we receive those reports on the charter review, engage the chamber, call upon other key, operators in the industry, key companies, to come and tell us what is it that they're doing. That will be followed by us going there to basically physically check whether what they say they're doing and what is written on paper is actually happening. And indeed, it's going to be quite a busy term. Come next year, surely we will be much more than being visible. But ferrochrome, like this extractor, given the fact that they came and approached us, fine. We will host them next Wednesday. Honourable members, then.